$20 bottles. Get there early to catch the game on the big screens. Centerfold Lounge opens 7 days a week at 2 p.m. on John R. One block south of 8 Mile Road. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge, 20th anniversary and NFL action. Football, buffets, hot ladies, rock and roll, and big specials.
Center of attraction.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to be with you. Another Sunday night in Detroit, beaming through our radio waves all throughout Michigan, Ohio, Southern Ontario, making our show international, and through the World Wide Web, definitely international, all across the country, all across the world. People listening, it's at 6 a.m., I think it is, in some places where people are listening. It's tomorrow, some other places. I can never figure that out, can you? Hey, anyway, this is a talk show. If you're just, some people say, I never heard your show. It's been on for a long time. Actually, this show and its predecessors have been on for 35 years. That's a long time. With a number of hosts, I think I've done it the longest. My name's Peter Werby, and you can reach me at 313-298-WRIF. If you're new to the format or to this broadcast, I usually yak for a while, and I give my real strong opinions. I expect the same from you. 313-298-WRIF, although we keep it civil. You know, we don't yell at each other once in a while. Yeah, well, we try not to. I don't like to do that. Sometimes it gets really weird. One of my standard lines was always, they don't pay me enough to do this. In other words, you know, people start shouting at you or something like that. Nothing gets solved in that manner. We podcast the program's rebroadcast tomorrow on radiopower.org at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. All the times are Eastern time. We'll be on live 11 p.m. till 1 a.m., and then we'll have interviews at 1 a.m., a couple of good ones, too. Then the show's archived at whiterosesociety.org. You know, it's really, I don't know, kind of unbecoming to gloat. No, yeah, I told you so. Yeah, well, I told you so, didn't I? I've been telling you so for the last 5 years, and I'm trying to soften that so it doesn't sound arrogant. But we've been faced with this blizzard of, I don't know, I probably could even say it, but I'm old school, so I'm just going to say BS. We've been faced with this blizzard of BS for the last 5 years. I don't mean to say there wasn't BS in the preceding years as well, and that we don't usually get that from politicians and people in power and the elite and all that. And, you know, so to some extent, it hasn't changed in the, what would you say, in the the quality and the quantity of it all is has just gone up enormously. Gee, I'm just looking at our phone lines, and there we go. All right, I thought they all went kaplooey. By the way, which leads me to say that when you call 313-298-WRIF, you will be greeted by Jay Hudson, who is our producer, and also will be phoning the screens this evening. Jay is also the co-host, along with our program director and midday DJ, Doug Podell, of Motor City Riffs, which goes right before this at 10 o'clock. And I would suggest giving it a listen, because those of you, people in Detroit, know real well, but many of you know, too, that Detroit breaks music. Has for the last 30 or 40 years. No, actually, not 30 or 40, for the last 40 years. And if you go back into jazz, a lot of R&B, gee, the last 50 years or so. Well, am I going to, oh yeah, gloating. So when you go from like an infinitesimal minority where you sound shrill, where people don't want to have your program on the air even, where when you say, gee, you know, I'm a little critical of what the administration in Washington is doing, and you get this avalanche of complaints to your boss, it is, I guess maybe I do get to gloat a little how much things have turned around. From being in this small minority, and that doesn't just include me, it includes a lot of you as well, because a lot of you weren't fooled either by what's coming out of and going on in Washington since day one, right? We knew it was all an avalanche, a blizzard of BS. I mean, I'd really like to kind of stress those words, those initials. stand for. Now the whole Republican conservative House of Cards is absolutely collapsing. We were talking last week about how the anti-war march in Washington garnered somewhere, I've heard the figures I trust, go somewhere between 250,000 and 400,000. And a march that was supposed to counter it got 400. Now, I didn't misspeak myself. These people had tens of thousands of dollars. They had organizers. They got a senator from Alabama, Jeff Sessions, to appear on the day following the anti-war march. And they came up with 400 people. I mean, if I were those guys, I'd be slitting my wrists. I mean, I would say that in my memory of political activity, of political demonstrations, rallies, votes, everything that gravitates around the political galaxy, that I have never seen anything more of a catastrophic political failure than the attempt of these pro-war right-wingers to bring, they said, they were, first they said 10,000, then they said 20,000, and they went with 400. Remember what I said last week? There are more people in lines at the Port-a-John at the anti-war, anti-Bush march than there was at the entire pro-war march. Of course, one wonders, and a lot of the people behind this were these so-called young Republicans. I mean, how can that be? How can there be young Republicans? I mean, aren't young people supposed to be wild and adventurous and radical and all that? One would think. That's the way it usually goes. And then they're supposed to get calmed down some. If they are what they are, how come they're having a demonstration in Washington and they're not in camo? I mean, the United States Armed Forces, the Army, but particularly the Army and the National Guard, just had the worst recruiting year since 1979. And people are saying, well, I'm not going over there. You know, I'm not gonna wind up with my face shot off. I'm not gonna go over there and kill a bunch of Iraqi civilians. I'm not gonna go and start fighting some insurgents who want me out of their country. I mean, even if they are whacked out right wing religious, and I don't even know that's true. You know, I've never even got a clear shot at who these insurgents are. Some of them obviously are highly motivated by fundamentalist religion in the way that Bush and, you know, his pals are. So it's just different religions, different countries of origin. I mean, it's easier for us to identify with our right-wing religious crazies than theirs, obviously, but we're in their country. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, what would you be doing if they were in our country? What would you be doing if there was an army made up of people from Iraq marching down our streets telling us that they're going to make our government into an Islamic Republic or something like that, or a Shia, they're going to change our constitution and make it Shia-based. I think we'd be too happy. But anyways, as I was saying, and actually my point was I was going to try to move beyond this because, I mean, if you don't think that the Bush administration is the most corrupt, incompetent, mendacious, which means lying, administration since, I don't know when, maybe since Grant or something like that, back after the Civil War, or maybe the worst presidency in American history, well, you're not paying attention. Let me get back to that in a minute. Pardon me. You're not paying attention, or you're just, I mean, there's nothing that Bush could do. I mean, you have an excuse for everything. Everything's a lie about him. Everything is liberals, liberal press, the whatever, whatever, whatever. There's nothing that you can really pin on these guys because everything they do is golden. I mean, so that's about a third of the population. And I'm just, it's hopeless. I mean, and that's what I tried to do for the last 5 years, bring you information that you might not already have. I mean, a lot of you have as much information as I do, and you have the same beliefs that I do. A lot of you brought me information. That's why you're so valuable as a talk show audience. Unlike these right-wing ditto heads that don't know anything and just wait for these grotesque right-wing apologists to give them the arguments of why everything that they think is insane really makes some sense. And they're still doing it. So, but anyways, you've got the head of the Republicans in the House is indicted. The head of the Republicans in the Senate is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission for what they call insider trading. And there's been other indictments, and who knows what shoe is going to drop next. There's this whole deal about this CIA agent whose name was made public, and this came right out of the White House. Could be as low as just an advisor to Cheney, but it could be Cheney or Bush themselves. So we don't know where this is going to land. And also, one of the things that I cautioned a lot of people about, or I mean I cautioned, and I don't know that a lot of people paid heed to it, but I would hope that you will next time around. A lot of this stuff doesn't get worked out. I mean, you get worked up right away because, I mean, gee, all of us got worked up about September 11th, but then there's wars, there's invasions, there's you know, all this stuff is going on, and it's hard to think straight. And I think I've told you this before. My wife says, how do you know when people are lying? How do you know when people are telling the truth? And she says, if they're on television, they have a suit on, they're lying. Now I can say, yeah, that's crazy. Come on. Partly she's being facetious and cynical, but you would do much better at a starting point to think that everyone on television is lying than you would the opposite. Saying, oh, they're there, and they have an American flag pin in their lapel, and they've got all these flags behind them, and it says the President of the United States, or whoever. Or it says the national newscaster. You'd do much better to think they were lying, and then kind of think through, because in a way I do that, I guess. I think, okay, these guys are trying to sell me a bill of goods. And then so that puts up a defensive mechanism that I look at it critically. I think, all right. Now, these outlets, the news outlets, the politicians, the corporate heads, all these people have probably a 500-year history of lying to the common people. So people won't challenge their rule. The wealthy, the powerful, the prestigious, the privileged, they exist in the manner they do, and they take advantage of people to the extent they do. They exploit people in the world that they do, because most of us, there's junctures where we do, but most of the time we don't challenge the privileged elite. For one reason or another, we kind of accept things as they are. All right, well, we're in a period now where things are beginning to unravel. The deficit, I mean, that could unravel us all. We're in hock to Asian banks. We're in hock, essentially, to our biggest economic competitor, and who some people in the Bush administration think could be a military competitor, and their banks own increasing amount of our debt. That's not real swift, is it? That's not a good idea. As it is, even if these bankers and the countries that control the banks decide, all right, well, we got to keep floating these Americans, even though they're doing everything imaginable to cut their own throats. We can't allow the world economy to go down. We can do all right just reaping the interest on the loans that we float to this, buying their treasury bonds and all that. But you, depending on where you are in an age group, you or your kids or your grandkids or whoever are going to be paying for this deficit that Bush has run up. All right. I keep saying I'm not going to talk about this. So here's what you can do. If you don't believe everything that I've said, there's two things. One, you're either so ideologically committed to the far right wing that there is absolutely nothing I could say or nothing you could be shown or nothing you could learn that could ever erode your 100 support for who I characterize as these corrupt, incompetent, mendacious looters, because that's what they're doing. They're looting our economy. Rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, which we'll get into a little later. 313-298-WRIF, by the way, is our phone number. All right, so where does that leave us? So, I mean, I know what I was going to say. If you're that ideologically committed, there's nothing I can say. Some people say, I listen to you for laughs. There's one of my colleagues says, I go to your website for laughs. All right. You can go to my website, by the way, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. Where I go frequently to start each day is not to the New York Times that I'm frequently quoting from, or papers like that, but to buzzflash.com. This is for the people that are going, well, wait a minute, things do seem a little crazy. Oh, yeah, I forgot about Katrina and all that, a few other little things in there. Things do seem a little crazy, but who are these people? What? The leader of the Republicans got indicted, another guy's under investigation. What's this all about? Go to buzzflash.com. Buzzflash.com. B-U-Z-Z flash.com. It's all there. It's about 85% from mainstream media. So it's not, whacked out radicals or anything like that. Guy, I love them. Hey, I'm a whacked out radical. Yeah, so I'm not putting them down, but a lot of people, they are suspicious of whacked out radicals like me. So be suspicious. I don't care. Good. Maybe, the other, I said, don't believe anything people in suits on television say. Don't believe anything you hear on the radio either. Or at least say, I need a lot of corroborating evidence. I mean, the whole idea of ditto heads, for instance. I mean, if someone ever, I know someone's going to do it now. If someone called 313-298-WRIF and said mega dittos or something, I'd puke. I mean, I don't want any, that's not, I want co-thinkers. I want people in a community that are critical thinkers, that can look at the world and understand it fully. People that want followers are people that want to work people for their advantage. I don't want that. All right, let's just get to Katrina Little. I mean, that disaster is ongoing, by the way. It's absolutely ongoing. But one of the things, and I was actually remiss in this, and here's why, talking about whacked out radicals. Some of my whacked out radical buddies who are doing some of the best work in the country, organizing food for Louisiana and Mississippi, groups like Food Not Bombs. You can go to foodnotbombs.net. I just sent a couple $100 down there, my friends and I. And I'm going to send some more as well. In fact, my wife and I just said, we're not buying presents for anyone anymore. We're telling everyone that from now on, and in the short run, it's going to go to hurricane relief. I'm not buying people pies or whatever the hell, my wife picks out for people's birthday. I'm not even doing it for my dad. They're all getting cards and say, in your name, I just sent $50 to Food Not Bombs. I don't need anything more, right? I don't need any, actually my family, they always get me clothing, get me the nicest stuff. So, again, Gaia bless them. But, but I would rather they spent the money and sent it to something like that. Anyways, so there's all these groups like Common Ground, that did all this medical relief and just endless stuff. So they've said that all of this violence that was being reported in New Orleans and in the Superdome was exaggerated. And, there's violence every day in New Orleans, just like there is in Detroit and Los Angeles and New York and what have you. So in that, to that extent, it wasn't unusual. But they said all this stuff about rapes was exaggerated, all this stuff about roving gangs and snipers was exaggerated. And I thought, well, if I read this on the air, people are just going to think, I'm going to lose credibility because it was being reported everywhere. Well, I should have gone with it. I should have trusted my instincts because everywhere you look now, reports of New Orleans violence exaggerated. Reports of rape, murder at Katrina evacuation sites were probably exaggerated, officials now say. Let's see. Well, it came from the police chief, Eddie Compass, who resigned. Thankfully, he says, we have individuals who are getting raped. We have individuals who are getting beaten. Let's see if there is more of this. I thought there was a better account. Here. This is from the Los Angeles Times. Major Ed Bush recalled. No, probably no. Relationship. Recalled how he stood in the bed of a pickup truck in the days following Hurricane Katrina, struggling to help the vast crowd outside the Louisiana Superdome separate fact from fiction. Armed only with a megaphone and scant information, he might have been shouting into, a hurricane, it says here. And it says, this is a frenzied media recycled and amplified many of the unverified reports He said it just morphed into this mythical place where the most unthinkable deeds were being done. Remember, there was rapes of children, body counts, unconfirmed sniper attacks, and scores of myths about the Dome and Convention Center treated as fact by evacuees, the media, and even some of the New Orleans top officials. Of course, Foxhole News topped it all. They talked about robberies, rapes, carjackings, riots, and murder. Violent gangs are roaming the streets at night, hidden by the cover of darkness. And even the Los Angeles Times, where this appeared, was saying that the guard troops took positions on rooftops, scanning for snipers and armed mobs as seething crowds of refugees milled below, desperate to flee, and on and on. So it was all wasn't true. It didn't happen. In fact, when I read these accounts, which is somewhere in this, you can go to, go to neworleans.indymedia.org, neworleans.indymedia.org, Indy, I-N-D-Y. So it's neworleans.indymedia.org. I should have had this on my site all along. I actually have a New Orleans site there. So people were actually cooperating. People were doing what they do frequently in the worst of situations, the best comes out. Just like up here or all across the country. We've had all sorts of benefits in the Detroit area. Little kids selling Kool-Aid on the... Kool-Aid? Lemonade, I hope. Anyway, so why aren't these news outlets getting it right? Well, the New York Times just announced that it is cutting its workforce by 500, including 45 people from the Times newsroom. So we're going to have less people doing hard news. And somewhere in here it says because, of course, they've got to, the bottom line. That's what counts. That's all that counts. So I just came into work. Oh, yeah. Let me just do this one thing I'll tell you about coming into work. 313-298-WRIF, and you can either comment on what I'm saying, bring up something else, or mention something that I haven't, if you like. Oh, yeah, also, you can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Now, one of the things that these volunteer groups did, Food Not Bombs, Common Ground, the Berkeley, I can't remember the names of them, but just hundreds of people have gone south. I mean, they were told by FEMA, they were told by the Red Cross, we are not needed, don't come here, you're going to make things worse, we're going to have to take care of you. And fortunately, hundreds of people went into these locales, and I have dozens and dozens of these reports of people feeding people, giving medical care and what have you to people that had not seen the Red Cross, who had not been touched by FEMA. Now, there's this article in the New York Times. I guess they still have a few people left in the newsroom. Stumbling storm aid effort put tons of ice on trips to nowhere. Here's where our money is going through these incompetence in the Bush administration. You got to remember, all throughout the Bush administration, these professionals that really run the agencies are leaving in droves, because put at the top of these are these cronies of Bush, these people that have no relationship to what suddenly they're put in place to administer. Like this guy, Mike Brown. You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. Remember that? And actually, Brownie is still being paid by you and me as a consultant to FEMA. Yeah, that's right. He's still drawing some big salary. Anyways, 91,000 tons of ice cube that was intended to cool food, medicine, and sweltering victims of the storm that would cost about $100 million. Now, 91,000 tons of ice cube costing $100 million? They must be delivered by Halliburton. Cheney's company, which is still paying him. It never got delivered, and it tells this long story about this trucker, Mark Kostanek, who was dropping a load of beef in Canton, Ohio. Dispatcher called with an urgent job. Pick up 20 tons of ice in Greenville, Pennsylvania. Take it to Carthage, Missouri, a staging area for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. So he then had these thousands of bags, but then he was told to take the bags to Montgomery, Alabama. After a day and a half in Montgomery, he was sent to Camp Shelby, Mississippi. And all the he had, and this the whole time, he had this, you know, in order to keep the refrigeration going, he had to keep the truck running, right? On September 8th, he was moved on to Selma, Alabama. After 2 days in Selma, he was redirected to Emporia, Virginia. So they're going the wrong way, along with scores of other frustrated drivers who had been following similar circuitous routes. At Emporia, Mr. Kostanek sat for an entire week, his trailer burning fuel around the clock to keep the ice frozen, as FEMA officials studied whether supplies originally purchased for Hurricane Katrina might be used for Hurricane Ophelia. I mean, can you believe these losers that are in charge of our safety? These were the people that were going to keep us safe. Several million people voted for Bush in this last election because they felt that Bush could keep us safe. That was the deal. And the driver, wait a minute, in the end, only three of about 150 ICE trucks were sent to North Carolina. So on September 17th, Mr. Kostanek headed to Fremont, Nebraska, where he unloaded his ice into a government-rented storage freezer the next day. And he says, I dragged that ice around 4,100 miles and it never got used. Well, they probably should have given it all to who? To Putinot bombs or something like that. All right. So now gas is, that's what I was saying on the way to work. Gas is $3 a gallon again. And Bush on Monday, this last Monday, called on all Americans to conserve gasoline by driving less. Remember, they used to just poo-poo that. By Tuesday morning, he'd come up with some specific advice for his White House staff. Take the bus. He also directed his staff members to turn down the air conditioning. It's like Jimmy Carter, doesn't it? Scale back non-essential travel, turn off copiers, computers, and printers at night, form carpools, and use public transportation. Now, what impact do you think this will have on the overall consumption of fuel? Well, probably next to nothing. Although, if we all actually did an emergency conservation of energy, we could cut into it enormously. I mean, dear folks here, the building that I'm broadcasting from, I mean, there's lights, spotlights on trees and stuff like that. I mean, you know, if you did away with that, it probably would. So Bush is doing his part as well. He's getting rid of some of the cars in the presidential motorcade. But here, Bush, when he landed at Air Force One in Lake Charles, Louisiana, they picked him up in this caravan and dropped him off yards away for a meeting with local officials. Let's see. And so he's flown also. He's flown on Air Force One on these photo op trips. I mean, it was absolutely, you know, he should go down there one time. I'm the commander in chief. I'm El Presidente. And I feel your pain and, you know, stuff like that. That's good. That's reassuring so people, at least on one level, symbolically, think they haven't been abandoned, even though they have. And they can tell whether they have or they haven't. But Bush's seventh trip to the hurricane region, the Air Force has estimated that it costs $40,000 an hour to fly Bush's 747. And he spent about 15 hours on his plane in the last 7 days. So what did I come up with that it cost? Something $600,000? No, I really got this. Well, somebody do the math for me and call in. But, this is the kind of nonsense that goes on. I'm going to get to you in just one second. I got one thing more here, too. So they also sent, is this in this pile here? Oh, yeah. They sent, everything is Bush's buddies, right? That's what called cronyism is. You get your cronies in there, or cronies of your cronies. So Karen Hughes, one of his cronies from Texas, she's flying all around the world making nice to these people in the country, in these countries that hate us, that think that the United States is the most destructive political force in the world, that it's this imperial monster that tries to force its will on other countries. I mean, whether you could argue whether it's true or not. That's certainly true under Bush, and it has been true in the past in general. But so they got Karen Hughes going around. She says, I look forward to these little kids. I look forward to shaking each of your hands and having you give me a hug. This is where our dollars are going for. Karen Hughes saying to kids, you're going to give me a hug. But in this photograph that I'm looking at, there's Karen Hughes as she chatted with children Wednesday in Istanbul. Pardon me. And she's giving them books. She is giving them books. Ooh, I can almost read this. The Encyclopedia of the Presidency. Yeah. Now, whose pictures are on there? Understandably, George Washington, the father of our country. JFK, this mythologized martyr who felt an assassin's bullet some 42 years ago or whatever it is. Abraham Lincoln, understandably, again, you know, big part of the story of America. Who's the fourth president, along with George Washington, JFK, and Abraham Lincoln? FDR? Uh-uh. Who else? What other great presidents are there? I don't know if I can name any. But, yeah, you guessed it. Bush! They got Bush on there! They got Washington, JFK, Lincoln, and Bush. Here is a presidency that's going down in flames. It's going to see probably a record number of indictments. And our tax dollars are going to print up these books so Karen Hughes can take them around the country, give them to little kids, and then say, I look forward to shaking each of your hands and having you give me a hug. I give her, I don't think I can say that. All right, if you're on the line, hang on. I'll be right back to you. We'll just do a couple of spots and back to get your calls. Peter Werby here with you. Night Call at 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Another WRIF concert. Spend an evening with the most stirring and powerful blend of rock and classical music ever heard. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, live in concert. Friday night, December 9th, at the Palace. Critics have called it strikingly original and breathtaking. WRIF presents Trans-Siberian Orchestra, live in concert. Tickets are on sale this Monday morning at 10 at cellardoor.com, palacenet.com, the Palace Box Office, and Ticketmaster. Charge at 248-645-6666. Friday night, December 9th, at the Palace. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, live. Pick up the new CD, The Lost Christmas Eve, in stores now. Available at Target.
Centerfold Lounge, Detroit's sexiest adult entertainment club, is celebrating their 20th anniversary. That's 20 years of hot ladies, rock and roll, and fun. Come celebrate with 20th anniversary specials, a complimentary buffet, buckets of beer for $20, and two for $20 dances. Take pleasure in great giveaways as you dance to the beats of the house DJ. Centerfold, with the greatest ladies, music, and light show. Bachelor and bachelorette parties are always welcome. NFL Sunday, Centerfold's opens at noon with great food, including pizza and wings, dollar drafts, and $3 bottles. Get there early to catch the game on the big screens. Centerfold Lounge opens 7 days a week at 2 p.m. on John R. One block south of 8 Mile Road. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge, 20th anniversary and NFL action. Football, buffets, hot ladies, rock and roll, and big specials.
Hey, I know it's late, but the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, well, they can help you. If you go to rockfinancial.com, you can get information about purchasing a home, refinancing, even consolidating some of your debt. Check us out, rockfinancial.com. You can wait till tomorrow and call 800-333-ROCK. You can go to the web right now, punch us up, rockfinancial.com. If you're purchasing a new home, we've got options for you you may not know about, and they're exclusive to the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Maybe you want to refinance your current mortgage, lower your payment, lower your interest rate, or you may be looking to consolidate some high-interest credit card debt. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now and check it out. See if there's something that makes sense for you. It can't hurt. It's late anyway. Might as well go to rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial is proud to be Michigan's largest mortgage company and available for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Check us out. RockFinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender. Details at RockFinancial.com.
Are you looking for a job in a fast-paced environment where the money's good and your winning attitude can brighten someone's day? Then you're ready for a career at Abuelo's Mexican Food Embassy. We're looking for friendly, dependable people to join the Abuelo's team as host and waitstaff, kitchen and bartenders. Join the team by applying at Abuelo's.
Now hiring in Sterling Heights at 44350 Shaner. Apply in person at the trailer on location Monday through Saturday, 8:30 to 6.
Discover Mexico. Discover Abuelo's.
Media Play, the best. Media Play for less.
Media Play has taken a music store, movie store, bookstore, and video game store and created an entertainment superstore. That's why at Media Play, you get all the hits at up to half the price.
Media Play, the best. Media Play for less.
This week at Media Play, get up to 50% off select items store-wide.
The good stuff.
50% off select CDs from Faith Hill, The Stones, and Coldplay.
This Just In,
Robots, Carlito's Way, Rise to Power, and Lords of Dogtown on DVD. CDs from Sheryl Crow, Lil' Kim, and Gretchen Wilson. Ultimate Spider-Man and NBA Live 06 video games. Plus, from your new Halloween headquarters, costumes up to 40% off.
Media Play, Media Play the best.
Media Play is going up to 50% off, so come on down now through Sunday.
Media Play.
The party never stops. Tuesday nights with The Riff at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Join 101 WRIF this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. The Riff will be there to party hard with a ton of free Riff gear to give away and lots of other surprises, but you can't get them if you don't come out. If you've never been to Leopard's Lounge, you're missing all the fun. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they have the most beautiful women in the world all there for your pleasure. So head out to Leopard's Lounge and get ready for your wildest dreams to come true. As always, guys, remember, Leopard's Lounge brings you the hottest girls on the planet, and they never charge a cover, ever. It's the best deal around. So get your buddies together and head out to Riff Night this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge and get ready to party. Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Broil.
Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Thanks if you're on hold for being so patient. 313-298-WRIF. Talking some just about Bush's admonition that we should drive less, that we ought to start conserving. Conserving fuel. Some of you may remember that Cheney just poo-pooed that. Now we're supposed to be doing it. Hasn't done much so far. Gas is $3 a gallon. Households are on pace to spend an average of $4,500 on energy this year, up about $500 from last year, $900 more than in 2003, according to Global Insight, a research firm. So, you know, it's just more of our pockets being picked. And you say, wow, the costs are going up. Yeah, if the costs are going up, the profits of the energy firms ought to be the same, right? If they raise the price accordingly, but they're making record profits. These oil companies are gouging us beyond belief. Are we being protected by the Bush administration? No, that's their buddies. All right, let's go to our phones. Again, thank you for being so patient. Here is it BJ from Real Detroit Magazine?
Yes, BJ.
Yeah, hey, welcome. What are you, like a writer or something?
I'm actually the editor, Peter.
Oh, hey, man.
How about that? How's it going? I was at the White Stripes earlier, but
oh,
it was a good show.
Yeah, they always put on a great show.
Yeah. But I wanted to get your take on cronyism a little bit. And Congressman Joe Nolenberg, he, I guess, is going to be in charge of billions and billions of dollars for Hurricane Katrina. And I don't know about a Michigan congressman being in charge of billions of dollars for that.
Why is he the head of the committee?
I guess he's got something to do with HUD, and he's been appointed on it, and he's going to oversee, you know, billions of dollars. I don't know how much you know about that, but I wanted to get your take.
Well, I don't in general, or specifically I don't, but in general, I'm sure that most everyone, including yourself, just the fact that you've asked the question, you know that there is these no-bid contracts. In fact, is it tonight? Yeah, actually, it'll be tonight at probably pretty late, 1:30. We're going to be talking about the cost of Katrina and who's going to be administering it, and the connection between these firms that are already getting the bids and their connection to the Bush administration. So the tragedy of poor people and middle class people is going to wind up to be just this windfall for these corporations. They're going to make this fortune. So they make great fortunes out of tragedy, whether it's war or...
Right, like Halliburton in Iraq.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's going to be Halliburton in New Orleans.
New Orleans, right.
Yeah, and they're going to reconfigure the whole society, the whole city. I mean, already a Bush member of his cabinet said the city's going to be a lot less black. And this is the dream of developers. You can grab this these areas that have been filled with this enormous portion of our society that is poor. And in the case of a lot of big cities, is also African American, and they're going to be gone. They've just been dispersed. There's this diaspora going on. I mean, there's the people now, as you can imagine, have gone to all 50 states, and several, I think, like over 1,000 in the Detroit area, for instance.
Yeah. Do you think that the response would have been differently from the federal government if it was a different city than New Orleans?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, they're so incompetent. I mean, it wasn't like they sat around and said, they sat around and did nothing. They had a national response plan that was not put into place. That did not depend on local officials. Like when Hurricane Rita, they didn't wait for Governor Perry of Texas or the mayor of Houston or anything. They began sending troops down immediately because they anticipated it would be, what was it? What, you remember what their phrase was? Something like incident of national importance, or and then that might even be the phrase. So that they could have done that with New Orleans as well. Certainly, people make the point. If it would have been all white middle class people, they would have been there in a minute. I mean, I guess one tends to think so, huh?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
And on the other hand, yeah, it is hard to say. And on the other hand, though, the fact that billions were spent on war and not in making that city secure.
Makes me sick.
Well, it makes me sick, too. My favorite new slogan is make levies, not war.
Right. Right.
But that obviously hurt everyone. I mean, Trent Lott, his house got, the racist Republican from Mississippi got his house blown away. You should have heard. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Peter, I got one more question for you. I just wanted to get your thoughts on biodegradable diesel and how come we don't talk more about that in Detroit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, how come we're using oil at all anymore, given that what a terrible...
We don't need to, right?
No, actually, we could run everything... I don't know. Some people have said that alternative fuel is there's not enough in alternative fuels to power the entire world's energy needs. Well, we're kind of screwed then because it's poisonous. It's running out. We fight wars for it. It's an awful substance, and we ought to be at least at a minimum trying for a crash emergency crisis program to get rid of oil out of our lives, and nothing at all like that's being done. Hey, thank you, by the way, for being so kind to me over the years in Real Detroit Magazine.
Oh. Yeah, I'll drop you an email and we'll get in touch. But thanks a lot for taking my call.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care, Peter.
Bye-bye. Bye now. Yeah. These guys have always been great to me. Well, let's go down to Texas, is it? Is your name Buford?
Buford, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't there also a Buford, Texas?
I believe so, yeah.
Are you in Buford, or is your name Buford?
Buford's my name.
Okay, good.
Yeah, this is kind of out of character for me, but I'm going to try to do a little Bill Bennett here.
Okay.
Okay.
You're going to be hypocritical and racist?
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Okay.
Okay. But take it with a grain of salt. I'm a pacifist here. Okay. I was just thinking if we were to take all the petite little trophy wives that are driving around in their Escalades.
Yeah.
With their little yuppie kids. Now I used to think that we do this after we run out of oil. But if we just toss them in a big vat and render them down for all the oil value, we would. But if we do it now, we'd save a lot of trouble. See what I'm saying? As far as
you know, using up oil. But that, of course, that'd be unethical and reprehensible. But we would save a lot of oil and the environment and that sort of thing, wouldn't we?
There you go. One of the things I and some others once put out a pamphlet urging. Remember when they were? Well, actually, they're back to it again. When they're harvesting baby seal pelts, right? Well, we advocated to skin the children of the rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's really hard
manner.
For me to say that, but I mean, it's reprehensible, you know. But my point, I guess, what I'm trying to make here is that these people with their American way of life, you know, we got, you know, yuppies driving around these big cars protecting their children and stuff, and we're all dying because of it.
Well, I have to say, in I don't know what it's like in Texas, but it ain't all yuppies. I mean,
That's true.
You know, the big trucks and, I mean, buddies of mine that are driving these enormous vehicles that previously only would have been used by people that were in construction trades or something like that. And now it becomes kind of the cool car to have. But
That's true.
But rolling
you know
up,
what I'm trying to say? My point is, though, is that it's like it's a status symbol. You see the men driving around the big trucks, and they buy their wives the big Escalades. Hey, look around. I grew up in Michigan, and I've visited there recently, and it's like a status symbol. You know?
Yeah,
and it's like,
of course.
We got to get off of that.
Well, I'm always sympathetic to people's plight. Not really. I mean, wealthy people usually don't have plights, but so I'm not talking about them. But for instance, one of the things that's happened already is that that overdue credit card bills have hit a record high. And if you connect that up, and it's always important to connect the dots, all the information is there. I mean, a lot of people get into conspiracy theories, and some of them are probably true, but you don't have to go that far. All you got to do is read the daily papers or go on the Internet and connect up some of this stuff. So you had this deal where energy costs are going way up, and actually put that one away. I can't remember what it was, but something like $900 or $1,000. That might be the difference between paying your credit card on time and missing it.
Right.
And of course, who winds up with it? I mean, the whole idea of credit cards is the wealthy, in other words, banks, loaning money to the middle class and the working class at this usurious rates, at these high, extravagant rates. And on the and I feel badly for people, and people often need credit cards in order just to make it through. But we should understand that we are suckers to be we're sheep to be fleeced.
Well, what we've done is we've made it cool to use up resources at an accelerated rate. And what I think we need to do is make it cool to, you know, find alternative sources of energy, like use farm animal refuse to make natural gas. You can make methane out of it. There's all kinds of things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not cool, you know. And I'm a bit of a scientist. And what I find is that the scientific community has been taken over by capitalism. And there's fuel cells is a good example. I attended a symposium, and they're like proton exchange membrane fuel cells that you can use in your backyard. But the electrical industry, you know?
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to push these, like, molten carbonate and all these things that require infrastructure and disempower us as individuals. And we need to make it cool to do things in your garage and in your backyard again.
Well, definitely. But it also ought to be law that every new structure that goes up ought to have solar panels, whether it's a home, whether it's an office building. And that would immediately begin to erode the need for these big utilities. All right. Hey, Buford, where do you live in Texas?
I'm just kidding. Not really in Texas.
No.
But I was saying something incendiary there.
Goodbye. I was thinking, because we get people listening all over the country. If anyone's listening in Texas, give me a call. I bet your name isn't even Buford, is it?
You know?
All right. Thank you. Goodbye. We got lots of open lines suddenly. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see here. Let's go to Greg in Westland. Hey, Greg, you're on the air. Greg, are you with me, buddy? Oh, he went away. All right. This is peculiar. All right. Good. It gives me more time to talk. Here, this is Craig is listening in Barrie, Ontario. Where's Barrie? Isn't that up near the Bruce Peninsula? I think so. In Canada. He's a longtime listener, moved from Windsor to Barrie, and so he's got DSL. And he says, if I may, I'd like to recommend a book for you to read if you haven't read it already. It's called The End of Faith by Sam Harris. I haven't heard of it. It's an analysis of how Orthodox religion especially, but religion in general, is leading to the current escalation in violence in the world as well, and will eventually lead to the destruction of the human race. Well, I hate when that happens. Or I don't know. Yeah, who knows? We've been making a mess of things. Once again, great to hear you. Keep making America ask questions. Now, isn't that important? Yeah, because lots of people just don't do that. Here is a question. You know, they don't question authority. Seen those bumper stickers? That's what. I remember talking at the beginning of the show. Be critical. Actually, I was going on with the difference between cynicism and criticism. But suspect. You know those things that say question authority? We should get a bumper sticker that say suspect authority, right? Here's Tom in Ann Arbor. Tom, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF.
No problem, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Just going back to alternative sources of energy, not so much for fuel, but... All right, I'm not some pothead just calling in. I do not smoke pot, but I find it insane that society hasn't come to realize the benefits of the hemp plant as far as paper, as far as a fuel source, a natural
sure.
fuel source. It's twice as efficient a fuel source as corn oil. Do you have any input on...
Well, I agree with you, and B, I hate to tell you this, Tom, but there's not anybody in the audience that believes that you do not smoke marijuana.
Oh, no, I why not?
Well, it doesn't matter. But anyways, it doesn't matter. But anyways, you're right that hemp as, what do they call it, biomass, can provide, as it has throughout history, everything from cloth, the sails of the USS Constitution, was the basis of a lot of paints. Hemp seed oil can be run in any car that's retrofitted to use like vegetable diesel. And it ought to be one of a many sources. So we could either grow hemp, which, by the way, is doesn't contain much THC. And if you do smoke it, that stuff that they use for industrial grade hemp will just give you, you won't get stoned. You'll just get one big headache. But there was a conspiracy essentially to drive hemp out of make it illegal for farmers to grow it. It was grown. George Washington grew it, isn't that the deal? Thomas Jefferson grew it because they used it for lots of things. But the story is, and it could very well be true, is that like DuPont that wanted to drive the hemp out of the marketplace because they wanted to use nylon and rayon and stuff like that. So there is, in fact, a great industrial use for it, and it's absolutely insane that it's prohibited from industrial growth. And I believe that now the United States is one of the few countries that in which you can't do it, that you can grow it, like, for instance, in Canada and all that. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate your call. Let's see here. We'll go to Reverend in Shelby. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
You make a lot of sense.
Thank you again.
Now, here's a question I want to ask you and all of your listeners out there and everybody in America.
Sure.
Where else in the world can you get such a fine democracy like we have? What are them people called that come from corporate America with suitcases full of money? And they bribe our politicians in Washington, D.C. What are they called?
What?
Lobbyists.
Oh, lobbyists, yeah.
Oh, that's a cute name, isn't it? Well, if I took a suitcase full of money over to my police chief over here and had him make laws for me, they'd stick me in prison.
Well, you know, Reverend, since the Bush administration has come in, they were always big and they could always shove laws down our throats, whether it was in Lansing here in Michigan or in Washington, didn't matter what the party was in. But during the Clinton administration, there was about 17,000 lobbyists. Now, there's now 35,000 registered lobbyists in Washington, thanks to the Bush administration's willfulness to just comply with whatever they want.
But you see, Peter, I don't want to have a fight Republican-Democrat because I am neither.
Me neither.
They're both con men, puppets, and liars. That's how I look at these politicians today. And what I'm saying is, Peter, why do the American people allow lobbying anyway?
Yeah, isn't that something?
We're voting these people in. They're supposed to work for us as Americans. Now, I don't want to get into these arguments. I'm a Republican. I'm a Democrat. I hate you. Forget all that garbage. Just get down to the basic fact. Why did the Democrats and the Republicans allow corporate America to squeeze their way in with suitcases full of money? The laws are made for corporate America. And the poor people never get anything. Just last thing I'll say to you, Peter, is tell me one great politician that we've had in the last 20 years. Just one. Do you know?
Can
you think of any?
Yeah, sure.
Think of one promise that a politician has ever promised 300 million Americans before they're elected and they gave it to them after they were in office?
Sure, there's let me think about it over the break.
Hey, Peter, thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you, Reverend. We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like the Shark Club on Ford Road, just east of Canton Center Road in Canton. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to wrif.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings, like Buddy's Pizza. Come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at wrif.com.
Looking for a sugarless gum with great flavor that really lasts? Grab some Trident sugarless gum in a variety of delicious, long-lasting flavors like Original and Tropical Twist that are sure to make you smile. Plus, Trident now comes in the new Easy Close Pack that's reclosable, so your gum stays in the pack right where it belongs. So you can take great, long-lasting flavor with you wherever you go. Pick up some Trident sugarless gum today in the new Easy Close Pack. Trident, a mouth's best friend.
Look for Trident sugarless gum in the new Easy Close Pack at your neighborhood Kroger store. You'll find everything you need for your family at Kroger. From the freshest meats and the farm fresh produce for family meals to handy snacks for when you're on the go. While you're at your favorite Kroger, don't forget to stock up on great tasting Trident sugarless gum. Great flavors and a cool new pack make Trident a mouth's best friend. So pick up Trident today at a store that makes shopping simple. Kroger, right store, right price.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program that helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
TCF has ATMs at 7-Eleven. Pass it on.
Okay.
Psst. TCF has a team at 7-Eleven. Pass it on.
Hey, TCF has a team at 7-for-11. Pass it on.
What? No. I said TCF now has ATMs at 7-Eleven. Now you can use a TCF Bank ATM at any Southeast Michigan 7-Eleven store. Get some cash when you stop in for coffee and a morning paper. Now that's convenience.
Wow. I can access my TCF account at my neighborhood 7-Eleven ATM.
You got it.
So if I open a TCF Bank totally free checking account, I get the convenience of free ATMs at any area 7-Eleven store too?
Yeah, TCF just tripled its free ATM network.
One fell swoop.
Amazing. Yeah, awesome, huh?
Yeah. It makes sense. After all, TCF is Michigan's most convenient bank, and 7-Eleven pretty much invented the idea of the convenience store.
Very true.
Just a question. Why are we whispering?
Yeah, good question.
See a TCF banker for details. Member FDIC.
All it takes is a little TCF bank.
Football is back, and the Pantheon Club in Dearborn knows that you want great entertainment with beautiful girls, great drink specials, and lots of football. Come to the Pantheon for Monday Night Football and watch the game on one of five big screen TVs. Enjoy $15 buckets of beer and touchdown shot specials. Your paid admission enters you to win a DVD player or a 27-inch color TV.
As always, the Pantheon is the place to be on Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. for college football with 75-cent beers and lots of girls. The Pantheon Club is open Mondays through Saturdays from 11 a.m. till 2 a.m. and Sundays from 7 p.m. till 2 a.m. with $1 beer specials Monday through Fridays till 7 p.m. every weekday. Enjoy the lowest beer prices, cover, and valet around at the Pantheon Club. The Pantheon Club is located at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Oakman. To avoid construction, exit 94 or Southfield at Ford Road and go south on Oakman to Michigan Avenue.
Remember, football, beautiful women, and great drink specials are all waiting for you at the Pantheon Club in Dearborn.
Duty. Honor, country. These three words define who we are. Duty. Friends and neighbors united for the common good, in service to others, and for the benefit of all. Honor. The deep-rooted faith that selfless dedication to a noble cause is right, just, and good. Country. A solemn vow volunteered to support our nation's people during desperate times. Mercy. In the midst of nature's wrath. Hope. When all seems lost. Duty. Honor. Country. We're the Army National Guard. Call 1-800-GO-GUARD. That's 1-800-GO-GUARD.
The Army National Guard. You can.
Sponsored by the Michigan National Guard. Aired by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, welcome back to our second hour. 313-298-WRIF. A lot of email coming in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hey, get this. The Republican governor of Ohio, Bob Taft, he's like the great-grandson or something of President Taft. His approval rating is 15%. Of course, he got convicted of four misdemeanors. Ethics violations and what have you. All right, so he's doing even worse than Bush Co. Here's what someone wrote into me, Angela, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She says, I couldn't help but feel really sorry for you when I came upon your website. That's peterwerby.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. You must lead a terribly sad life. There's help for you out there if you want it. It is people like you that make me ashamed to be an American. No morals, no respect, no values, no nothing. Full of hate for your fellow Americans. I don't get this. No morals. How does she know that? I mean, it's true, but you don't get that from the website. That's not true. I actually have a high ethical code. I don't ever talk about morals or morality, but ethical behavior, I think, is extraordinarily important and not one coerced from above. No respect. I don't know. Where do you get that? No values. No nothing. Full of hate for your fellow Americans. All right, so here, Angela, then she wades in. Why do you think God allowed Hurricane Katrina to ruin New Orleans? Why New Orleans? Because of how supportive they are of gays and lesbians. See, these are sickos. Why do these people still exist? I mean, can't they figure this out? Need I say more? No, Angela, you need not say more. In fact, I wish you wouldn't. She says, I pray. Can you imagine this? She's actually praying to God. Here's this woman filled with hatred saying that God, like Sodom and Gomorrah, which was the city, Sodom or Gomorrah, both? Yeah, all right. I guess two separate. God laid waste to them. I pray you will receive help someday for yourself. And actually, she hopes that I fall. I mean, this is not. She doesn't really hope anything good happens to me. She hopes I just fall down some deep shaft or something like that. All right. Seeing nothing on here telling me where to go. Let's go to Joe in Detroit. Hey, Joe, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Pete. How's it going?
Going terrific.
Hey, if God hates gay people so much, why'd he make them? I mean, it's his fault, isn't it?
Yeah, and so many.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think we pretty much have come to an impasse in this country, maybe even in the whole world, when you just take a look around and try to grasp what's going on. You know, our economy's terrible. We're at war. We have Bush and his criminal gang of Tom, the laundry man DeLay, and Bill Martha Stewart Frist, who, are basically a couple of criminals along with the rest of the Republicans.
Well, other than that, things are all right, Joe.
Well, no, not really.
You're right.
You look at the national debt. We're in debt beyond belief. We're going headed towards, $9 trillion, which is an amazing record for conservatives who allegedly are supposed to be responsible, but they're far from it. They can't.
They are starting to get a little concerned because, they were the guy. I mean, there's only one thing worse. They used to label the Democrats, conservatives and Republicans did, as tax and spend. But these guys are tax cut and spend. You know that Bush has spent more money in tax dollars than any president in recent memory.
And it's not getting through to any of those people that claim to have these beliefs.
Well, there are not very many of them, so we don't have to really worry about them. What I worry about is the average person that's getting looted, their future is getting looted, their kids' future is getting looted, and there's still like a third of them are saying, I don't know what they say anymore, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, we're literally being destroyed with the collapse of the dollar, the cost of gas, the cost of living. And I've never seen so many people going through garbage cans in my life.
Yeah, on the other hand, and that's going to wind up like Guatemala or something like that, because in my walks through the suburbs around my house, I go from like working class suburbs like Ferndale and Oak Park, but then into Pleasant Ridge. And although Pleasant Ridge is very liberal, voted very highly for Kerry, the home improvements never stop. So you would almost empirically throughout my life, you would think, gee, things are just swell. And, it is swell for a lot of people, but a lot of people are really hurting. The average wage for the middle class has decreased overall.
Yeah, and if you look at these hurricane victims that are homeless, it's absolutely unbelievable because we have more peopleless homes in this country than homeless people. It's a fact, even by the government's own websites.
Well, they're building them trailer camps. They're going to be in, they used to have what they called Hoovervilles during the Depression. They will now have Bushvilles.
It is absolutely unconscionable what's going on. We've got state police posts closing left and right. We've got police departments shrinking. And the only government solution I've heard so far is to allow people to shoot. Our government, our state government, wants to allow citizens just to be able to shoot people on sight, pretty much.
Well, that sounds like a whole other subject, but we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. I was thinking, as Joe very accurately and very succinctly laid out the problems that we face as Americans, and I was thinking again about this email that I just read about how Angela wrote, "You must lead a terrible, sad life." And this is a show, folks, where we're supposed to be talking about the grand issues that affect our lives. And but this is one segment, because one of the things is interesting in like Sarajevo in Bosnia during the wars when the Serbs were bombarding them, can you imagine that being under constant bombardment from the hills, that whenever there'd be a lull in the bombardment, the people would immediately go out to the cafes and begin drinking coffee and sipping liqueurs and all that, trying to, even in the midst of war and wreckage, try to have some moments of happiness. Well, and I don't know. Am I being defensive? Do I have to say that I have fun, that I do, that I go to a lot of things I enjoy and all that, I don't know. I keep thinking about that. Maybe the website of mine is one-dimensional, because it just has the political side, and there's a lot more to me. I'm sure there's a lot more to Joe as well. Hey, by the way, a couple of times I've used the analogy like Bush being the father. Remember, 1984 had Big Brother. Really should have been Big Father. And Dad, though, has made a mess of his life because he's cheated, he's lied, he's overspent, and he's driven the family deeply into debt. Once, when he had some sense, they actually had the family had money in the bank. Now they owe everyone. They're maxed out on the credit cards. Creditors are knocking on the door. And what does Dad want to do? He wants to take a trip to Las Vegas, right? Because, and if this happened in a family, among people, you'd realize that Dad was actually becoming unstable. That he no longer had the capacity to run the family in a manner that traditionally you do, Dad doing. And he's not listening to Mom at all, of course, who probably is making a lot more sense. But now, Bush has just announced that there's a $104 billion plan that would get astronauts to the moon by 2018. So NASA's going back in space and people back on the moon by the end of the next decade. Well, isn't that fun? Speaking about fun, isn't that exciting and all that? Well, it is. I'm not 100% sure why this is a necessity to do. I mean, people always say, well, they got Velcro out of it. Isn't that what the space program provided us with? Something like that. But, there's no money to do stuff like this. Where are they going to get $104 billion? Oh, we'll borrow it from the Chinese banks. What the hell? We already owe them, a half a trillion or something like that as it is, or or plus here, the Senate would give Bush $50 billion more for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan as part of a $500 billion defense measure. How can they call it a defense measure? It is just pure and simply a war measure. We do not have a defense department any longer. We have a war department. And that's what they called it in the Constitution. All right, back to the phones. Here is, I can't even make this out. Is it Sri? Whoop, wait a minute, I got to put you up in the air. Hi, welcome to the broadcast. What's your name?
My name is Sri.
Sri, all right. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, well, somebody just made a comment. Did we have a good politician within the last 20 years?
Yeah.
I think we have had a good politician within the last 30 years, and that is Jimmy Carter. And I'm wondering if the American people will grow up and realize that the Jimmy Carter's presidency is among the best, because he did such a beautiful job of handling the country through the worst energy crisis ever.
Okay, that's actually, Sri, you were the only person who've called in to take, who was it, Reverend, who take his challenge to name one decent politician in the last 20 years.
That's right. But it's not 20 years, it's 30 years, I would say, because Jimmy Carter was not a politician for more than 20 years.
Yeah, you're right. Now he's, doing his Habitat for Humanity.
He does what Bush does not do for the poor.
He does. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for that nomination.
Okay, yeah. And I also want to point out one more fact that
sure.
We failed to criticize Reagan for what Reagan did. I mean, Reagan was just lucky because we started spilling in oil after he became the president, and also the technology improved in such a way that his presidency got a lot of praise. But I really think that the Reagan's presidency did not amount to very much, and that was the man who was succeeded by Bush and by his son.
Mm-hmm. We actually had there was some point that these Republicans wanted to replace Hamilton on the $10 bill and put in Reagan's face on it. And I suggested Ray Charles, the singer.
Yeah.
And we had a vote on this show, and I don't think it's too scientific, but as you can imagine, Ray Charles won, I think, something like 20-1 over Reagan. So I haven't heard any. I think sensing that vote, the politicians have sort of dropped it, I think. All right, thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. They're going to need this $50 billion, by the way. This is absolutely incredible, and you can imagine the impact on people in Iraq. U.S. is forced to import bullets from Israel as troops use 250,000 for every rebel killed. This is from the London Independent. We don't get stuff like this here, do we? Hey, by the way, there's some open lines. 313-298-WRIF. U.S. forces have fired so many bullets in Iraq and Afghanistan, an estimated 250,000 for every insurgent killed, that American ammunition makers cannot keep up with the demand. As a result, the U.S. is having to import supplies from Israel. A government report says the U.S. forces are now using 1.8 billion rounds of small arms ammunition a year. The total has more than doubled in 5 years, largely as a result of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as changes in military doctrine. Well, what the hell could that be? Just shoot all. You know, actually, there's a famous photograph from the Vietnam War where the United States killed about 3 million civilians, if you can imagine that. We're talking now 25,000 to 100,000. I mean, that's a drop in the bucket from what, how many were killed in Vietnam. But there was one of the slogans of some Ranger unit that said, kill them all and let God sort them out. And that's what you start getting into. If you're just firing this almost, maybe some of you guys have been in Iraq. What is this all about? I mean, is it just firing wildly? I mean, how can that many shots be expended? Let me know. 313-298-WRIF. Let's go. I mean, I'm having trouble seeing this stuff. Let's go to Andrew in Westland. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering about the recent amount of people that are doubting organized religion and all of that good stuff.
What do you mean?
Well,
what do you mean? You wonder about
it. The Da Vinci Code came out. Seems like everyone's jumping on the bandwagon to start hating on organized religion.
Well, wait a minute. I doubt it. I don't hate it. Although oftentimes, actually, you know, organized religion has done a lot of pretty awful things, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm not arguing it. I'm on the side of doubting. But it's not like any of this information is recently come out. I mean, the Crusades have been over for a long time, but now I'm looking at the newsstands, and there are new books coming out every 2-3 weeks about how Catholics are doing all this, they're changing the rules, they're doing this and they're doing that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say. They're not leading Crusades anymore.
Well, right. But
on the other hand, the Catholic Church and the Pope are trying to limit women's right to abortions, which would probably lead to who knows what kind of everything from difficulties to deaths for millions of women around the country, around the world, rather.
Right, and that's the side I'm on as well. I'm just I guess I'm just trying to figure out how all of a sudden they go from being, you know, 200 people in the course of a week going to a non-denominational church to the one that I go to up to 1,000.
Well, you should be happy.
I am very happy. I'm just wondering if you have any kind of research or anything.
I don't know. Maybe people are opting out of the traditional religions. They do carry a lot of baggage with them, and a lot of these kind of churches, like, what is it, the Church of Today, Marianne Williamson, people like that, or, you know, is... they offer kind of a, I don't know, a fusion or a mishmash, depending on how you look at it, of a lot of different trends and spiritual explanations for the world, right?
Right. I'm looking on the top seller book list, and all these books that are coming out recently are just recycling the older books. Like the Da Vinci Code, more or less, just recycled all the information in Holy Cross, Holy Blood. But for some reason, the sales on Da Vinci Code were, I think, 2 million copies more.
Well, have you read it? I mean, I read it, and it's an extraordinarily exciting story. But you're right. There's also, I can't remember the publisher, but every one of those things about Jesus marrying Mary Magdalene and all that is all in those books that have been around for years and years. You're right. But he just picked it up and made an exciting story of it. But, you know, it's actually a pretty religious book. It's just anti-church.
Yeah, in every way. Which I'm loving that people are opening their eyes now, but when there are people just busting out the same information only in a new title.
Yeah, well.
Like the book that the guy was talking about earlier. I looked it up while I was on hold, and it's the same info in Da Vinci Code, only not interesting. Dan Brown did a great job of telling the story of the same information that's out.
Sure.
But,
and, you know, and it has, at the end, a religious message to it, doesn't it?
I would have to say so.
Yeah. I mean,
like, I don't know if the Holy Grail is even out there anymore, but hopefully they turn it up someday. No. I don't argue about it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Stan in Garden City. Hi, Stan. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good evening. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Great.
I had to contact you because the representatives in Washington aren't doing the representing in the will of the people, so you're my best hope, sir, to get this message out. I got.
Uh-oh.
You know, I like to start out with Michigan's economy being number one worst in the entire state of the union right now.
Have we made it to the number one worst?
Oh, yeah, we're number one worst.
Huh.
You know, that's what the media is reporting. And, you know, how are people going to make it through wintertime with the cost of these fuel bills skyrocketing, gas prices, and, you know, just jobs being outsourced left and right? It's terrible, man.
Well, what who's really failing in this is the Democratic Party. I mean, where are these people? I mean, where they're just kind of waiting around, you know, hoping that that Bush and the Republicans are going to follow their own weight, which they very well may. But how about the idea of really, you know, stepping into the fray and saying exactly what you are saying? I mean, why isn't there investigations of price gouging on fuel costs? Why, I mean, why isn't there this large movement among the Democrats to get the U.S. troops out of Iraq? I mean, the majority of people want to get the troops home from Iraq now. I mean, you would think that they would have the courage to say that, but you don't hear much from them.
You know, it's kind of funny. I want to go on a second issue here on 60 Minutes tonight with Andy Rooney. He started to touch off on the spending of how much this country spends on protection and everything else with military spending compared to other countries. And then he touched off right on the end with Eisenhower's military war complex and how, you know, Dwight D. Eisenhower warned the American people to separate the Pentagon's doings and biddings with that of the cost spending and how we're getting put in the hole with
right.
all this military power, you know. So I wonder if you had any knowledge on that. You could touch off with that. And I thank you for your time and consideration, sir.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. Well, we live in a permanent war economy. That's pretty clear. We have since the first quarter of 1942. I didn't misspeak myself. So for the last 63 years, this has primarily been a war state whose economy depends upon war expenditures for war, preparation for war, expending them in wars, reconstruction after wars, and what have you. And we finance it. I mean, instead of financing what peaceful countries do, we wind up just blowing it all up. And we've probably wasted trillions of dollars in preparation for wars and in some cases fighting them, like Vietnam and this one and I don't know, what else? Grenada, remember those little things in Panama? Those didn't cost much in the scheme of things. But the big ones that cost essentially hundreds of billions and probably totals up to trillions. The whole Cold War, all of it, just a a scam to separate us from our money. All right, let's go now to Brian in Royal Oak. Hey, Brian, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Pete, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
Great. I just want to get back on the ammunition deal, man.
Sure, please.
You know, we make more ammunition than anybody in the world, I think, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, I'm a gun owner.
Hey, can you turn your radio all the way off?
Sorry, brother.
Yeah, well, no, it's making you it's making it difficult for you. There you go.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't see the. I mean, I see the price of ammunition going up, but
mm-hmm.
you know, I just and I agree with you, man. We should be pulling our troops out, man.
Yeah, well, it's costing us a fortune, which we don't have. We're in debt already.
Yes, we are.
And when we need people, like in Louisiana,
like down south, yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
You know, I was just looking more into this article. It says John Pike, director of the Washington Military Research Group, globalsecurity.org, said that based on government figures, U.S. force had expended around 6 billion bullets between 2002 and 2005. Is that possible?
That's a hell of a lot of bullets, man.
I know. I do some shooting, and I don't use that many.
Yeah.
Well, you know what we need? We need some vets.
Yes, we do. We need more vets to just, you know, say what they need to say, and, you know, yeah.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Let's go to Jim in Dearborn. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Just a quick comment. The gentleman who asked about decent politicians over the last 20 years, Senator, you may have forgotten, you know, Senator Wellstone of Minnesota.
Right.
He certainly, I think, qualifies as a tremendous.
Minnesota or Wisconsin was it?
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. He was just outstanding. It was a tragic loss. He was killed in that plane crash during the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. John Conyers of Detroit has always been admiral. There's a lot of, big figures, though. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess you'd think then mostly presidents then. Mm-hmm. Not a lot to write home about.
Right, yeah. Peter, one other quick thing. Have you ever read Wendell Berry at all?
Oh, you know, he's wonderful. Yeah, I just have an essay about what did he write? The End of Industrial Agriculture?
Yeah, well...
an essay.
He says certainly industrial agriculture is one of his main focus points, and... I think he's about the most profound writer going in the world, practically. I mean, he's just tremendous. Everything that I've read by him, and I think everyone could benefit by reading almost anything that he's written. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Well, let me just say, Jim, if you look at Wendell Berry's warnings about the state of world agriculture and the fact that it's based on this centralized industrial agriculture, if you combine that with some of the dire predictions about the economy and add to that somebody like Richard Heinberg, which is also a very interesting writer, H-E-I-N-B-E-R-G, and he's written... Actually, I think it's on my website. It talks about the end of oil. The future looks kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need is, I was just about to say some politician. I don't know why these words even left my lips. Or they didn't, but I were about to. A politician of a caliber high enough to begin to understand the crisis we're facing and to suggest policies in terms of that. But, you know, usually big changes in this country and the world have been when the people themselves have been in motion. And that's what's needed. And I think we're really reaching a critical mass where we've been silent as a people for a long, long time. And we've just watched the suits on television tell us everything's okay and they're going to take care of us. And we're beginning to realize that it ain't a happening.
Mm.
So hopefully, that's my hope.
Right.
That's my hope, that we as a people will begin to move and start addressing some of these problems.
Yes, indeed.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Appreciate your call. Here's Mike in Southfield. Mike, welcome to the broadcast. Hi.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
Hey, just want to touch base. We're not going to agree. I'm a Republican. What I get tired of is hearing everyone... It's what's the government going to do for me? The one gentleman just called a while ago, what are we going to do when the cost of heating goes up in the winter? How are you going to heat your houses? You're going to adapt. You're going to find a way to do it.
Wait. The adapt is you will take more of your hard-earned money and pass it over to Bush's rich friends.
See, I'm not going to argue because we can't agree. It's never going to happen. The things that I think you're crazy for are the same things you think I'm crazy for. So,
yeah, but there's a real world out there. There is a real world in which under Bush, that home, all the energy costs have gone up as much as, I can't even do the percentage, but they've gone up extraordinary amount. And on the other hand, you have firms like ExxonMobil who have contributed hundreds of thousands, maybe over the years even millions of dollars to the Republicans in order to create situations where you and I get looted. And you just say, well, we don't agree. What do you have to say to that?
I see it different than you do. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look.
So you think that's okay that the average person who overall the middle class and the working class, the wages are decreasing overall. Maybe yours are going up or mine's going up, but overall the middle class has lost ground over the last 5 years. The ultra wealthy have gained extraordinary amount of value. And if there's a fixed amount of value in a given society, and it's determined by social policy how that's all distributed, well, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and that's socially engineered by, you know, I mean, there's still about a third of you in the country that still supports this gang of looters in Washington, but I can't understand why unless you're extraordinarily wealthy.
No, sir, I'm actually unemployed. I lost my job.
You lost your job what?
In March.
Oh, in March.
Yes.
Well, and of course it was your own fault, right? It wasn't anything to do with the whole system.
It was a company getting too large and dictating their own rules and how they wanted to do it, Home Depot. But, you know, I just hear everyone crying, you know, they want everything from the government, but no one's willing to do it. I'm not saying either is right because, like someone said before, they're politicians. They just want to do for themselves.
Mike, you know what the Stockholm Syndrome is?
No.
That's where when you're kidnapped and held captive, you begin to identify with your captors. Get me?
Yes.
Think about that one, will you? And get back to it. Think, you know, these guys all think of their own interests. And they've got lobbyists, and they've got politicians, and they've got everything under the sun taking care of their interests. They don't need your support. Come on. Forget about it. All right. Let's see. Matt, way out in Hamburg, Michigan. Hi, Matt. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. It's Peter Werby with you. Oop, wait a minute. Hold on. Go ahead. Sorry. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I listen to your show while I'm on the road. I enjoy all the topics that you talk about. I think you're due a lot of credit for being able to juggle all the knowledge that you share with everybody every night.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I happened to stumble across Detroit Public Television, and the show really spoke about the Vietnam era, Spiro Agnew, Richard Nixon, Cassius Clay.
You mean the show they just did on the 60s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the 70s and the Flower Children and everybody going out and peace and love and... That was their revolution. I see a lot of parallels between today... the war in Iraq and the war in Vietnam, and I really wonder what our revolution, what we would be fighting for today, if you have any comments.
Well, I would say the same things, that we want to live in a peaceful and fair society, and you know, you say, well, you know, people say, well, what about all these people that are attacking us? We got to deal with that. I mean, we've got to take care of ourselves in terms of protection. But the main thing is we want to work for a world in, you know, we talk about revolution. There was two aspects to the 60s. Pardon me. One was this political revolution that got these just this little pinnacle of rulers and their ability to hog most of the resources and the wealth. But the other thing was was the age of Aquarius, where we were all going to kind of meld into this consciousness of love and what have you. And I even say it, you know, with a little bit of sarcasm in my voice. But, you know, I mean, here's where it is. Think about John Lennon's song, Imagine, and the words to that. That's what animated the people during the 1960s and no less so should it today, I guess I'd say.
Well, so many people gathered, and really I was surprised to learn that because of their gathering and their continual fighting despite all of the hardships that they, the different students, I mean, the physical abuse by the police and the rioting in Detroit and just a lot of the terrible things that happened, these people... they still stood strong with their beliefs, and I think they affected public policy.
No, yeah, they did. But look,
through Nixon.
Well, you're right. You know what? I don't know whether this is the kind of thing that suits your fancy, but just last week ago Saturday, there was 250,000 to 400,000 people showed up in Washington to say no to Bush and his war. And if you've never been to one of those, it's the most extraordinary experience. It is so exhilarating.
I actually organized one while I was at a university that I graduated from.
Well, good for you. That's great.
And it really was. It gives... I have to just say that if you've never been a part of it, it's really exhilarating.
Yeah, that's exactly the word. And there's not a lot of exhilaration left. Hey, Matt, I got to take a break, so thank you so much.
Very well, sir. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, glad to. That's what we're here for. We'll be right back. 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Another WRIF concert.
Prepare for a double dose of two of rock's finest. Get ready for Foo Fighters.
Can someone get in the back?
Together in concert with Weezer. Live. This Friday at Joe Louis Arena. Weezer. Fighters. Two bands, one night. This Friday at Joe Louis Arena. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. All Ticketmaster locations, Fox Theater and Joe Louis box offices. Fighters and Your Honor, Weezer Make Believe in stores now.
Hey, I know it's late, but the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, well, they can help you. If you go to rockfinancial.com, you can get information about purchasing a home, refinancing, even consolidating some of your debt. Check us out, rockfinancial.com. You can wait till tomorrow and call 800-333-ROCK. You can go to the web right now, punch us up, rockfinancial.com. If you're purchasing a new home, we've got options for you may not know about, and they're exclusive to the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Maybe you want to refinance your current mortgage, lower your payment, lower your interest rate, or you may be looking to consolidate some high-interest credit card debt. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now and check it out. See if there's something that makes sense for you. It can't hurt. It's late anyway. Might as well go to rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial is proud to be Michigan's largest mortgage company and available for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Check us out. RockFinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender. Details at RockFinancial.com.
We set standards high in what we do. Your success.
Cooley Law School and Oakland University want you to know that you can attend law school right here in Oakland County. We offer students the advantages and resources of the nation's largest law school in a smaller class setting on OU's beautiful Rochester campus. Learn more about Cooley Law School at an open house on Thursday, October 6th from 4 to 7 p.m. on the campus of Oakland University in the Oakland Center. You'll talk directly with Cooley representatives on topics from financial aid to the admissions process and more. Register online at cooley.edu or RSVP at 517-371-5140. That's 517-371-5140.
It's the knowledge and the skill and the ethics we instill at Cooley Law School.
The Thomas M. Cooley Law School, now on the campus of Oakland University.
Hey, third shifters, listen up, because you demanded it. Ford Lanes in Dearborn Heights presents the all-new Third Shifter League. For all you third shifters that like to work hard and play hard, Ford Lanes' new Third Shift League begins Tuesday, October 11th. It's three-person teams for men and women every Tuesday morning at 7:30. With a short season, you don't have to worry about a long commitment. Ford Lanes Restaurant and Bar will be open at 7:30 for all you third shifters all season long. Don't forget, Ford Lanes Range is a great bar to come watch all your favorite sporting events on their big screens. Open 7 days a week. Also, don't miss karaoke and cosmic bowling every Friday and Saturday evening. Don't wait, third shifters. Ford Lanes has the bowling league designated just for you. Sign up now by calling Ford Lanes at 313-292-1700 and ask for Nate. You asked for it and you got it. Backed by popular demand, Ford Lanes Third Shifter League. Starting Tuesday, October 11th. Ford Lanes, located on Van Born near Telegraph and Dearborn Heights. Need more info? Then call Ford Lanes at 313-292-1700.
3 for 2 and 2 for tea. Just me for you and you for me.
Tea for two? With Love the Double from Chase, why not make it pasta for two? Or sushi for two? Because whatever your favorite restaurant is, now you can enjoy it twice as much. Just pick up the tab with your Chase Rewards credit card, and you can earn double rewards now through December 31st. Plus, with Love the Double from Chase, get double rewards on gas, grocery, and drugstore purchases, too. With double the cash back, double the travel points, and double the great stuff, Tea for Two just got twice as exciting. Call 1-800-YOU-CHOOSE or visit chase.com/lovethedouble. Your choice. Your Chase.
Offer good through 12/31/05 at retail locations that classify their merchant location for Visa and MasterCard as restaurants, gas stations, grocery stores, and drug stores. Certain earning restrictions apply. For questions and to determine eligibility, call the number on the back of your credit card. Your account must be open and not in default.
The party never stops. Tuesday nights with The Riff at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Join 101 WRIF this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. The Riff will be there to party hard with a ton of free Riff gear to give away and lots of other surprises, but you can't get them if you don't come out. If you've never been to Leopard's Lounge, you're missing all the fun. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they have the most beautiful women in the world all there for your pleasure. So head on to Leopard's Lounge and get ready for your wildest dreams to come true. As always, guys, remember, Leopard's Lounge brings you the hottest girls on the planet, and they never charge a cover, ever. It's the best deal around. So get your buddies together and head out to Riff Night this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge and get ready to party. Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Broil.
Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our final segment. And let's see, at 1 o'clock, we're going to be interviewing, I got to remember his name now, David Margolick, I think. Margolick, that's what it is, David Margolick. And if you either read the Detroit News Free Press or the New York Times, there was a review of his book. It's called... All right. Anyways, it's about the, I don't know, I can't remember. But it's about the Joe Louis Max Schmeling fight of 1938. And yeah, it's been on ESPN a lot. Here was Detroit's own Joe Louis, the Brown Bomber, up against this representative of the Nazi government and everything that went around that. Very, very interesting interview. And then at 1:30, Antonia Juhas, who will talk about the cost of the war and who's benefiting? Ain't you and me, of course. It's the big corporations. Well, let's see here. Here's Bruce from North Carolina. Bruce, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for calling from so far away.
Well, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm in a different country.
Okay.
But I was listening to your show earlier, and you were talking about the protest last weekend, which was absolutely amazing. By the way, but they apparently, I don't know if you were aware of this, but there was a bacteria that was detected in the mall.
That's right.
Did you hear about that?
What was it? Not rabbit fever. What was it?
It's tularemia, which is rabbit fever.
Rabbit fever, yeah. But, you know, I read this whole article about it. Then at the end, they said that it may have been naturally occurring.
Right.
But on the other hand, I mean, what I suspected, that the desperation of these the fascistic right that was putting together this counter protest, would they have done anything like that?
I'm not going to do the tin hat thing tonight, man.
Okay, well, they did. remember who was attacked by the anthrax? Not only did we not get Osama bin Laden, we never got the anthrax killer either, and that was aimed at the media and liberal Democratic senators.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
And so that's a question, but. But the biggest thing is, you know, I just wanted to call and comment a little bit about, you know, the various I mean, I think everyone in who is at the top echelons of our government right now is either under investigation or under indictment, and it's, you know, I really think that they're imploding from within.
They are. I mean, the Democratic strategy may be a good one. Just step back and let them fall.
Let them fall.
Well, I mean, the word is that that you would think now that Bush would try to put in some moderate into the Supreme Court, but some people are putting forth the idea that actually that he'll nominate some hard rock conservative in order to create this conflict. And trying to tar the Democrats with this this sense that they're the ones that are being ideological and obstructionist and beholden to special interest groups like pro-abortion organizations.
Yeah. Well, you know, I there's not a whole lot wrong that we could do at this point except for sit back maybe and not try to define what we're about. You know, I think we, you know, we are in a classic position now where we had a contract with America for 40 years and it brought us a whole lot of good stuff. And it's time to start reminding America about that.
Well, Bruce, as I was reminding people last week, unless something happens, George W. Bush is going to be sitting in the White House till January 20th, 2009.
Yeah.
2009. I mean, think about that. So what has to happen is some process that that empties that that office other than elections. And by that, I mean peaceful legal means, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you know, that's the congressional and senatorial elections. We've got to take back the House and the Senate.
I think we got to have like a velvet revolution and drive him from office. I mean, they do it in other countries. They do it in... countries in South America. They did it in Ukraine and Belarus, places like that.
Well, I'd love to see that happen, and you know what? I'll participate.
Okay.
All right, man. Have a great night.
See you at the next one.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Where are we going next? Let's see. Brian in Ypsilanti. Hi, Brian. It's Peter Werby. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Doing good.
Hey, Peter, I wanted to call and ask you, I've grown up listening to you all my life, and I feel like you're one of my best teachers on a weekly basis. But the thing is I want to someday run for president, and I was wondering if you knew, like, where to go, because I've called, like, various places, like the White House, they didn't call back. I called Jennifer Granholm's office, they called back, but they, you know, I kept on getting run around as to what you need to actually do.
To actually run, how interesting, Brian. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, no one. I call all these different offices that they say. You know, one place says call this place. One place says call that place. You know, I'd like to run as an independent. And you know, one of the things. I want to like cure this debt. I mean, this debt is just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And one way that I want to do it is. I want to try to like commercialize the presidency somewhat and like have like a presidential line of things that that the president would endorse as things that he likes to drink, like have a presidential cigar, maybe a presidential cigarette, a presidential
sure.
Soda pop, you know, stuff that is his favorite.
Ain't that America? Everything's always for sale.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people will want to identify with what the president or try what the president is doing and then raise money for, like, homelessness, raise money for to cure the debt. And also, one thing that for an alternative suggestion for fuel is something that I read in Jack Ayer's The Emperor Wears No Clothes, which is that maybe we should try hemp. Powered vehicle.
Sure. In fact,
And that's one thing that I'd like to do as president is give somebody an incentive of, you know, look, I'll make you a rich man if we could get something that grows out of the ground and fuels our cars.
You know, I'm looking for this email. Did I ever get that? Oh, yeah. Here, Jay wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. So didn't Cheech and Chong have a car made of hemp?
Yeah. Yeah, and up in smoke.
In the movie they had it?
Yeah. And all the police officers, you know, started getting high when the car went up in smoke. You know? But that's another thing that I want to do is I want to legalize, like, marijuana because I think that drugs that grow out of the ground and are untouched by man are good for you. Maybe coca leaves. I think cocaine is bad, but I think that maybe coca leaves might be some, you know, another way to raise money, you know, tax money to cure this debt because, I mean, we're going to have to pay for this somehow.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, going back to how do you actually apply to run for president, there are a lot of independents, and there's a lot of small parties. There's socialist parties, and there's right-wing parties. And so there obviously is a process, but yeah. I don't know. And then you like the Greens and all. Yeah. I don't even – usually you have to – like in the state level, you have to register somewhere, but I don't know. Where do you go? You go.
Yeah, where's the first place?
All right, well, maybe someone that's out there knows this.
If they could let me know, that would be fantastic through you. I always listen to you every Sunday, so if somebody listens and finally gets through, please let me know.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Peter.
Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. What is... Oh, yeah. John is listening in Denver, Colorado, and this woman was writing into me and said that he looked at my website, said I must lead a terrible, sad life. It's people like you that make me that I have no morals, no respect, no values, no nothing. And John writes in, Pete, I happen to appreciate your website. It speaks and shows a lot of truth. Unfortunately, the truth can be at times harsh and ugly. That tends to scare some people, like Angela. Yeah, I guess you're right. Feel bad that you didn't like it, but so it goes. All right. Here's James in Wisconsin. James, hi. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
One quick note, and that was to the Reverend, and he asked why Americans put up with the lobbyists, the amount of lobbying that goes on in Washington. And I would guess that almost every single one of us is represented by a lobbyist. If you're working or if you're a senior citizen, just about every issue that we are involved in as citizens will have a representative there. So
yeah, I mean labor unions and the AARP for older Americans and
right.
What have you. On the other hand, there is something instructive that it has that the number of lobbyists have doubled under Bush.
Well, I think the green light went on and they responded. It's like, time to do business. But the main issue I wanted to talk about was the rally in Washington. I was there, and it was kind of surreal. I mean, I've gone to marches in Chicago and Milwaukee and here in my hometown, but it didn't quite sink in that I was now in Washington, D.C., even as we went past the White House. And talking about how the Democrats are watching or waiting, sitting back, supposedly, to watch the Bush administration implode, you still, even if he's tottering, you need somebody to step up and give that little shove that's going to send them over the edge. It's not going to happen, I don't think, without that.
And no, I agree.
As we were marching past the White House, I was holding a sign, carrying a peace sign with this woman from Wisconsin, and we were talking. And, you know, looking back on the Vietnam era in the 60s, and it was not a completely peaceful revolution of sorts. I mean, of course, Kent State, there were four students who were killed, if I remember correctly. I'm sure untold numbers of broken limbs, stitches, cracked skulls, and
sure.
Such. And we're going past the White House, and of course, Bush wasn't there. He was in Colorado.
Flying around, conserving fuel.
Conserving fuel, exactly, and showing that he really cares. And I made the comment, I don't know if I can say this on the air, but does it reach a point where there has to be some level of not just peaceful or nonviolent civil disobedience as what went on Monday after the rally, but that there needs to be some sort of real threat, physical threat?
Well, I don't know. I mean, during the 60s and 70s, 90 to 95% of the violence was at the hands of the police, the National Guard, and what have you. I don't think...
It was kind of brought... yeah, they were the ones who were inflicting the injuries. However, it was... To a degree, they were forced into this position. And don't forget that the Weather Underground was, if I remember correctly, they set off a bomb inside the Pentagon.
Well, if you ever saw the film,
I did.
Weather Underground, what did they do? They carried out something like 25 bombings and never hurt anyone.
Right.
And also...
Well,
know,
with the exception of Madison. I don't know if that was the Weather...
That was not the Weather Underground. Or actually, somebody in the math building at the University of Wisconsin
right.
was killed.
Who they didn't think would be there doing research.
Right. Well, I mean, that's why... And ultimately, I don't think that the fact that all these bombs went off during the 1970s... That wasn't what changed anything. That's easy to deal with, and that actually, in many ways, I think even plays into the hands of the authorities that are trying to block change. So,
well, that's what I'm told always, but it certainly made the issue vibrate across the country in a very real way. I mean,
it did.
And also, that rally, I came home and I'm looking at our local newspaper, so I, page A3, you know, an AP article with about 12 paragraphs. That was it.
Yeah,
and the next day, there was even more space devoted to the 400 pro-war.
I know. I mean, that's amazing, but that's what the media always does. And plus, they reduce the number anywhere from a third to more than that even. All right, James, I got to take a couple more calls. Thanks
for calling in
from Wisconsin. Appreciate you listening way out there. I wanted to get into, and I have no time whatsoever to do it, and I'll do it next week, but that the net worth of America's wealthiest has risen more than 10% since last year. And for the third consecutive year, the rich got richer. This is from Forbes, and we'll talk about that. And on the other hand, a study has found that children don't benefit from these tax credits they're supposed to get. More than a quarter of American children belong to families too poor to fully qualify for the $1,000 a year child tax credit. I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, that's just disgraceful. Here's Tim and Romeo. Tim, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
It's Tim and Romeo.
Romeo, what did
Hello,
I say?
Mr. Werby.
What did I say? Okay, go
you?
Ahead.
To the guy that called in, his name is Brian.
Yeah.
He wants to know how to become president.
Yeah.
Well, first you're going to have to join the Democratic or Republican Party. You're going to have to work for many, many years for the Democrats or the Republicans. You're going to have to be, like I said one time to a friend of mine, you're going to need $1 billion.
Oh, you mean if you really want to be president?
If you really want to be president
right.
of the United States, you're going to have to join, because there's no other party going to win. Ralph Nader will tell you that. I'm sure you're familiar with Ralph
sure.
Nader.
Sure. You're going to have to be a whore for corporate money.
That's right. You're going to have to sell your soul to the devil. You're going to need $1 billion, or you're not getting in. Simple.
Yeah.
It ain't hard, Brian. You've got some kind of disillusionment, man, about this, you know, just going out there and everybody's going to love you right away and know you. You've got to get in there. You've got to spend years and years of proving to corporate America that you can be a thief.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. But, Peter, one thing I want to say real quick.
Sure.
If you want Ford Motor Company, GM, and Chrysler to make the kind of cars you want, someday I'll call you back again. I'll show you how to take back this country. You're consumers. You have the power over corporate America. They can't play that game of Monopoly without you. If you wanted them people to change what they're making, the garbage they're making for you, quit buying their cars. It's called uniting.
I got
you've got to have a united front.
Jim, you have hit the it's like, what was that? I ever see those reruns of the old, what was it, Groucho Marx show? And he said, Vip, you know, you've... Yeah, that was the secret word for the night, unite. And that's what we don't do. All right, I got to move on. I got time for one more call. Thanks for yours. Please call back. I'd like to love to hear about that. All right, here's Bill. Bill, you're our final caller. I need it kind of quickly, though. Go ahead.
I can't give it to you quickly. I wanted to talk about Bill Bennett.
Bill Bennett, all right, the ex-Secretary of Education.
Yes, and I'm African-American. He floated the idea that you exterminate if you abort all the black babies, the crime rate would go down.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you could use that extrapolation on a lot of different things. But I'm curious, and unfortunately, you don't have time. I wanted to get some response from white people. Are whites that paranoid and afraid of blacks who are doing nothing to them?
Yeah, I think
that the likes of Bill Bennett would float that idea, and then other major talk show hosts come to his rescue to apologize for him?
Well, the thing is, Bill, that if African Americans are disproportionately represented in the poor because of their history in the United States, there's some perverse, distorted, hideous truth to what he was saying. I mean, essentially because people aren't committing crimes because of the pigmentation of their skin. If people commit crimes, it's almost exclusively because they are represented in the poor class. So essentially what he was saying is, gee, if you could get rid of the poor class, you'd have less crime. And that's at one level true, but it doesn't get to the point of why is there racism? Why is there such a large number of poor people in such a wealthy country?
Peter, let me float something else out to you.
You got about 30 seconds, unfortunately.
Black people are not trying to subvert this country or kill white people. Why did he float this idea? Let's give all of the Arab extremist women abortions, and that way we'll have less terrorism in the country.
Yeah, it's just as sick. I absolutely agree. Bill, you know, you got to call me back on this because I think you're hitting at something. We don't talk about these issues as much, but I'm up against a hard break. So thank you, sir. Thank you for calling, and we will take it up again if you will call back. I appreciate that. All right, stay tuned for the interviews. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call. Right after this.
Hi, I'm Greg Bonner, and I'm the new owner of Tri-County Mattress Factory in Westland, Michigan, where we'll be anyone's deal. Recently, Tri-County Mattress asked Riff to help get our message out to the public that we were under new ownership and ready to give you quality bedding at fantastic prices. We've had great success using Riff as an advertising vehicle, and Drew's 10-second live reads have really helped us kick business into overdrive. I just can't say enough from Stacy Latona, my account rep, to the production department that just nails my message. Riff is just a great team to be a part of.
Hi, I'm Stacy Latona from WRIF Sales. Riff doesn't just rock, Riff works for your business. Call me at 248-591-6831.
Loosen your meter hoses and get ready to raise a stein and salute because it's going to be one wild Oktoberfest party this Wednesday night at Wild Woodies in Roseville. It's a celebration of beer and beautiful people. See off feeders into summer and usher in autumn the Wild Woodies way. Join the Doc of Rock, Doug Bodell from 101 WRIF, along with the Frisky Frawlines of Wild Woodies sassy wait staff. Take part in Wild Woodies sauerkraut dive or pretzel eating contest. Enjoy ice cold beer specials all night long. Then cheer on your favorite waitress in Wild Woody's Bavarian Babe contest. Plus, what's Oktoberfest without October's Best? Watch the Wings and Blues take to the ice on Wild Woody's big screen. Ladies, you walk in the door absolutely free. You'll be oompa-ing all night long. This Wednesday night, Wild Woody's Wild Oktoberfest Party with 101 The Riff. Sponsored in part by Jade's Adult Novelties. Call them at 586-465-PLAY. Wild Woody's on Gratiot, just minutes from 696 or I-94 in downtown Roseville. Call the Wild Line for more details at 586-294-5331.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh?
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Brad, you won't believe it.
What?
I know you and Sarah have been looking for a new place, right?
Yeah, but everything's too expensive.
Well, what I'm about to tell you is crazy, unbelievable. The coolest.
Just tell me.
Right now, you and Sarah can own a condo on Walled Lake for under $200,000.
Yeah, right.
East Bay Condos. Check out the code at East Bay. Two bedrooms, one and a half bath, garage, GE appliance package, everything. Guess how much? Go on, guess. $189,900 at East Bay Condos. I'm not even kidding. The code is quality and could be yours. Buy today and move into East Bay now. Seriously, pack your stuff and move in tonight. $189,900, you're done. Nothing extra.
No way. I can't believe it. How is that possible? East Bay Condos are awesome.
Yeah, East Bay Condos. At East Bay, you'll be surrounded by the changing colors of Walled Lake and invite friends and family over with 1,300 square feet and a finished lower level. You'll be entertaining all the time.
We're there. Now what?
EastBayWalledLake.com. Hurry up. Don't wait. There's six coves left. Unbelievable. The cove is yours today for $189,900. Done deal. EastBayWalledLake.com.
the great plays, incredible comebacks, and unforgettable moments. Now experience Game Day every Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at GameWorks all season long. Saturdays, rush into GameWorks for the best college football matchups. Then join your friends each Sunday and Monday at GameWorks to catch all the hard-hitting, non-stop excitement of your favorite pro teams and players in action with the NFL Sunday Ticket. And don't root your team on with an empty stomach. Score big at GameWorks with mouth-watering ribs, chicken, pastas, pizza, steaks, fresh salads, tasty desserts, and your favorite beer, wine, or specialty drinks. And every Sunday and Monday, go long with the Pro Pass. Get 3 full hours of video game play for just $20. Now that's definitely worth cheering about. So get in the game and celebrate Game Day every Saturday, Sunday, and Monday all season long at GameWorks. GameWorks, located at Great Lakes Crossing.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. Sports plays a pretty large role in lots of our lives. We're always rooting for the home team and what have you. But at different periods in our history, sports has taken on a magnified importance in the social and political life of our country. And one incident, one particular night long ago, still remains in the memory of many of us. And that's the Joe Louis-Max Schmeling fight in 1938. And I came in here and I asked somebody who I think was probably about 35, I said, I showed him this book, the author who we are going to interview in 1 minute. Did he know about this? And sure he did. So let's welcome David Margalek. David Margalek has been on the broadcast before. He's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. He's worked there for the last 9 years. He covers culture and politics. He's recently included profiles of Tony Blair, Ariel Sharon, and Robert Novak. And he also covered the trials of O.J. Simpson, Lorena Bobbitt, and William Kennedy Smith. The Times nominated him 4 times for the Pulitzer Prize. He was covering those trials for the New York Times. His brand new book is called Beyond Glory, Joe Louis versus Max Schmeling and A World on the Brink. David Margalek, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's very nice to be back.
And I should remind people when I say welcome back that your last book was Strange Fruit, a biography of a song, and that was the Billie Holiday song, the absolutely searing and, chilling song about lynchings in the South.
I seem to specialize in writing about 2 or 3 minute chunks of time. We had a 2 or 3 minute song and then a fight that lasted 2 minutes and 4 seconds.
That's interesting. I don't know if you saw the Bob Dylan biography on PBS last night, but they had a little cut of Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit, and it actually brought me back to our conversation about that. But we should talk about Beyond Glory. It's an incredible book. There is a pattern, though. Late 30s, African-Americans, how all of that intersects with the racial and larger politics of our country. What's the draw there for David Margalek?
Well, I think that it's just there's something about that era that always interested me. It's an era when the civil rights movement was first starting to bubble up. It's an era of radical politics in America. It's an era of fascism in Europe. All of these mighty forces are going up against one another, and these things have always interested me. I mean, it was very recent history, I suppose, when I was growing up, but I was interested in it even then. I mean, I had heard the Edward R. Murrow recording. I can hear it now. I mean, Murrow is back in the news with this new movie, and there was a record that he made in the 50s with sounds of the 1930s, the Hindenburg blowing up and FDR's fireside chats, and it had the call of the Louis Schmeling fight on there. And so from a very early age, this fight has been part of my consciousness. I was always intrigued with it. I love the way that it framed issues as clearly and sort of crystal clearly as it did, and I was always intrigued with it, and I finally got around to writing a book about it.
Well,
and 7 years later, I finished it.
Okay, I want to get into that in a little while, why it took the length that it did. But remind people about the Joe Louis-Max Schmeling fight in 1938. All of us could use refreshing. That's why your book, Beyond Glory, is so interesting. But a thumbnail sketch of the fight and the kind of the social political milieu in which it occurred.
Well, the fight was in June of 1938. It pitted an African-American, Joe Louis, who was then the world heavyweight champion, against Max Schmeling of Germany, a former world heavyweight champion. And, you know, strictly as a matter of boxing, it was an interesting event. But it really, it took on extra significance because of the personalities and demographics, really, of the fighters. Lewis was an African-American, an icon in the community, a colossally important figure and much neglected figure, I think, in the history of civil rights in this country. A hero in black America, a hero in white America, really the first black man that white Americans ever really cheered on. And that was all on one side. And then on the other side was Max Schmeling, a German, not a member, not a Nazi, but very much embraced by the Nazis and somebody who embraced the Nazis back to a considerable degree. On the other side, and so it was not just Lewis against Schmeling, it was seen as white against black and freedom against fascism. Black America was very interested in it. Boxing at that point, of course, was really an enormously important sport, second only to baseball, and a heavyweight championship fight was really the biggest event in all of sports. And boxing framed ethnic, racial, political tensions in a way that no other sport did. After all, it was really mano a mano, as one man against another one in the ring, and boxing was a sport that had fierce ethnic rivalries built into it. I mean, there were Jewish boxers, black boxers, Irish boxers, European boxers, and it was just the kind of thing that lent itself to this sort of struggle. You know, this extracurricular struggle with extra factors beyond sport. And that's really, that interested me as much as the boxing element, really. This is a book about the 1930s and about the politics of the 1930s, really, as much as it is of sport. And I should just mention one more thing, Peter, sure, which is that it was a rematch. Lewis, in 1936, was seen as the champion in waiting. He had revitalized boxing, as people in Detroit certainly remember. Lewis came along and electrified boxing. Boxing was sort of in the dumps. It was short on charismatic champions. And then Lewis came along and revivified the sport to the extent that the color line, which existed in boxing and had existed ever since Jack Johnson had lost the title in 1915, people had vowed that because of Johnson's escapades, there would never be another black champion. But as I write in the book, avarice trumped prejudice.
yeah.
I mean, what happened really was that people, you know, however people felt about blacks and about a black world heavyweight champion, Lewis was too good to keep down, and too many people were making money off of him to keep down. So Lewis was seen in 1936 as invincible, and then Schmeling comes along, a very methodical, careful boxer who had studied Lewis's technique intimately, and beat him. He was the 10-1 underdog and beat him, and it was just an enormous event in athletics and in the world, a catastrophe really in African America, the cause of great celebrating in Germany. Schmeling returns on the Hindenburg, meets with Hitler and Goebbels when he gets back, as well as with tumultuous and adoring crowds, and this just sort of revved up the political implications of a rematch.
Yeah. Now, the first fight in 1936, was that a title match as well?
It was not a title match because Jimmy Braddock,
okay,
you know, who's since been recalled in Cinderella Man, was
sure
the champion. But basically, Lewis was seen, as I say, as the all but official champion, and he was just beating one former champion after another in order to get a shot at Braddock. And really, Schmeling, he had beaten Primo Canera, a former champion, in 1935. And then later in 1935, he beat Max Baer, another former champion. And Schmeling was just sort of one more sacrificial lamb on the way to the title.
And I'm a Detroiter, and there's that Joe Louis fist in downtown Detroit and everything, and I can't remember for the life of me who Joe Louis won the title from.
He won the title from Jimmy Braddock.
Oh, he did?
Won the title from Jimmy. That's a very interesting story. You would think that because Schmeling beat Lewis, he would have gotten the shot at the title.
Sure.
But for two reasons, he didn't. The first was that Braddock knew that he was a lame duck champion. He knew he was going to lose, and he wanted to cash in. He wanted to have the biggest payday he could get. And though he signed to fight with Schmeling, he realized that Lewis was the one that was going to bring in the fannies and the seats.
Mm-hmm.
And So he was looking basically for an excuse to get out of his contract with Schmeling to fight. And they came up with a very handy one, because Schmeling at that point was already enough of a political lightning rod that there were threats to boycott any Braddock-Schmeling fight. And Braddock and his manager said, well, you know, how can we can't fight if anti-Nazis and Jews are going to boycott us, because Jews were up to 50% of the fans at the average heavyweight championship fight. No one will come to this fight. And so he managed, he slithered out of the contract with Braddock, with Schmeling, and then Braddock fought Lewis, and Lewis won the title. But as Lewis said, I'm not going to be the real champion until I beat the only man who beat me, Max Schmeling. And that set up the rematch in 1938.
David Margalek is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He's the author of Beyond Glory, Joe Lewis versus Max Schmeling in a World on the Brink. I want to get to the last part of that in just a little while. And by the way, I should mention that David Margalek will be in our town, in Detroit, at Borders Books, that's on Woodward in Birmingham, on Friday, October 7th at 7 p.m. I'm going to try to get there as well. Now, just a little bit more in history. You mentioned Jack Johnson, who outraged white America. He went out with white women. He opened up interracial clubs in Chicago. He went to Mexico and denounced the United States when he was indicted for some phony crime. There's always portrayal of Lewis was the good Negro. He didn't spit in the face of white America, which essentially meant living like a an ordinary mm-hmm. human being. But but you mentioned Lewis as sort of a precursor of the civil rights movement. Could you kind of
right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that in the sense that Lewis set out, Jack Johnson, incidentally, was very unpopular. He had made a lot of enemies in black America too. You know, there were many people in black America who weren't crazy about his carrying on with white women. And so he was a very controversial champion. And Joe Lewis came along and set out with the help of his manager, John Roxborough of Detroit. He set out to be a very different kind of boxer. You know, somebody who behaved himself, who didn't flaunt his victories, who didn't hang out with white women, who was always very polite in the ring and out of the ring. And in so doing, he became acceptable not only in white America, but in black America, too. I mean, everybody embraced him. But particularly in the way that white America embraced him, well, actually, there are two prongs to it. He was a civil rights leader in the sense that white America embraced him in the way that it had never embraced a black athlete or a black man before. And that in and of itself was a source of tremendous power for him and influence. And, I think that he raised the racial consciousness of a whole generation of white people.
Yeah.
I think that's not an overstatement. And then he was a source of really colossal racial pride in the African-American community. I mean, if you go back and read the black newspapers from that day, they covered him from stem to stern, his every activity, his marriage to a young black woman, you know, the way that he bought a house for his mother in the black bottom section of Detroit. Every time he went out and spent a lot of money on clothes or whatever, it was a source of great race pride. And I once wrote a story about all the songs that were written about Joe Lewis. I mean, you and I, if we thought about how many songs that were written for athletes, you know, a song about Joe DiMaggio, a couple songs about him, you know, and here and there you can think of one. By one count, there were 43 songs written about Joe Lewis. There
really?
Was a whole CD of Joe Lewis songs that came out a few years ago. And so He was just a source of enormous racial pride, and I think in that sense, and also as a liaison to the white world and white America, his decency as a champion, his conduct during the war when he joined the army and rallied the troops, he's an enormous hero.
Now,
but fell out of fashion, I think. I think was sort of supplanted in the public imagination by Ali. I think that's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
I've often wondered, you know, why is it that this book waited so long to be written? I mean, after all, this fight, you know, was on everybody's list of the greatest athletic events of the 20th century. Why did it take so long for someone to write a book about it? And I think it was partly because Lewis seems like an old-fashioned figure now. But that's not really for us to say. I mean, the historian's role here is to write about what his contemporaries thought about him, and that's what I did.
Now, you have Joe Lewis in a sense, or maybe in a larger sense, particularly to black Americans, but to many white Americans as well, representing our country against this representative of this increasingly hostile Nazi government. Yet you had a situation in the United States during the 30s when there was a Great Depression, and of course people are always looking for scapegoats, and in terms of racial segregation, internal domestic terrorism is what kept African Americans for almost 100 years as second-class citizens. How did that all play out? So you had, I mean, on one hand, did you have this white people with this great amount of racism being exhibited, and then on the other hand, rooting for a black fighter? Which that's sort of there was a Spike Lee film like that had those aspects to it. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, that's right, and this was an issue that the Nazi press made a great thing out of. You know, they would talk about how, you know, a black champion was fine for Americans when they were afraid of losing the heavyweight title, and black athletes were fine when they wanted to win gold medals at the Berlin Olympics, but the rest of the time they treated blacks abysmally, and what hypocrites they were. And it's an interesting thing. It was all over the Nazi press. Of course, the Nazi press would go on to say that the black man was inferior, and what offended them about American racial attitudes was not prejudice, but hypocrisy. They pretended to be better than they really were. And so it's very true that Lewis did, you know, Lewis's career was against this terrible racial backdrop, and there are plenty of instances where Lewis felt the sting of racism himself. I mean, if you read the contemporary newspaper articles about him, you know, there are all kinds of racial stereotypes in them. You know, I remember the lead of the Washington Post article on the fight, on the second fight, the 1938 fight, is, you know, Joe Lewis, the lethargic chicken-eating colored boy.
Oh, no!
Beat Max Schmeling last night.
Oh,
that was the lead in the Washington Post.
Oh, man.
But at the same time, I'm very wary of feeling self-righteous and, you know, feeling sort of historically self-righteous about these things and assuming that people back then were all ignoramuses and we're all so enlightened. And, you know, at the same time back then, there were surprising statements from many, many white writers about how Lewis was a proud man and extolling him and exhibiting a great deal of racial tolerance. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't all clear back then. I mean, there were a whole bunch of, you know, a wide range of racial attitudes.
David Margalek is my guest. Remember, he's going to be in Detroit Friday, October 7th, 7 p.m. at the Borders Books in Birmingham. The book is Beyond Glory, Joe Lewis and Max Schmeling, and A World on the Brink. It's published by Knopf.
I wish, just if I can interrupt
sure.
you, Peter, just to say that I wish I'd been on your show 3 years ago or 4 years ago, because I would have loved to have heard the memories of people in Detroit of Joe Lewis. You know, Joe Lewis started in Detroit.
Sure.
He was born in Alabama, but he emigrated to Detroit with his family as a young boy, and came up the hard way in Detroit and began boxing in Detroit. And it's something that Detroit can be very proud of. And I once went to the Joe Lewis Museum over at Cobo and talked to some people who remembered Lewis, who were over there, gathered over there for a commemoration of Lewis. But it would have been very interesting to have spoken to people who watched him and watched him progress and make his way. I also would have liked to have known more about Paradise Valley and the Black Bottom and the very vibrant black neighborhood in Detroit. You know, there's a lot in the book about celebrations there, you know, after Lewis fights. Lewis fights were always huge events in the black community, and there were celebrations after all of his most notable victories. After he won in 1938, there were 500,000 people on the streets of Harlem celebrating. But there were also victory celebrations in Detroit. And I even had the street names Beaubien Street and the various other streets, Verner Avenue. I think somebody told me that I'm not an authority, even though I went to school in Ann Arbor, I'm not an authority on Detroit, but somebody told me the highway just went right through there, the interstate highway, and cleared it all out and really destroyed what was once a very vital neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have known more about that.
There was this stretching out of Black Bottom, which was near downtown Detroit, and then there was this whole major thoroughfare called Hastings.
Hastings,
and,
yeah.
And the I-75 highway, just the interstate, just obliterated that incredible piece of Detroit history.
Go ahead. There was one of the famous stories. You know, when they were very conscious of Joe Louis's image. And one of the famous stories was that after he started to make some money, one of the first things that he did was he bought his mother a house in Detroit, in Black Bottom. I think it was on Hastings Street, but I have it. The address is in my book. I think he paid $9,500 for it. And the black press would chronicle very lovingly how much money he spent for furniture, and, you know, and his mother was saying, "We don't want a great big show-off house. We just want a decent house."
That's an extraordinary sum, though, for those years.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary sum for back then. And I think somebody told me that, you know, the city ended up paying a pittance for the house, and they just, you know, it was all cleared out when I-75 went through.
I'm sure. David Margalek, before we, in fact, this is why your book, Beyond Glory, about the Louis Schmeling fight, it has so many pages in it, but we haven't really even gotten to the fight. A lot of people probably do remember there are documentaries about the fight, but tell us about the fight, and perhaps so we can talk about some other things in less time than the fight took, which is probably kind of easy.
Yeah, well, the fight was really, you know, there's a famous story about Count Basie coming into the fight and sitting down and dropping his hat, and he bent over to pick it up, and by the time he came back up again, the fight was over.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I mean, Louis came out of his corner. Usually, you know, they would spar around for a round or two and just sort of feel one another out. And in this instance, Louis was fired up that night. Louis didn't like Schmeling. Louis was there's this great myth that they were great buddies and became great buddies. It's something that one of the many myths surrounding this story that I've tried to explode in the book. Louis was an angry man the night of that fight. He felt that Schmeling had made racist statements. He felt that Schmeling had ripped him off on the fight films. And he felt that Schmeling had charged him unfairly with deliberately fouling him the first fight. And he thought that Schmeling was a bad sport. And so he came tearing out of his corner that night and quickly got Schmeling on the ropes and pummeled him really into submission, punched him in the kidney, a perfectly legal punch, and sent him sprawling and breaking a couple of his vertebrae. Schmeling was in the hospital for 10 days afterward. And it was just, many people think it was the greatest exhibition of boxing in history, and certainly it was the most electrifying 124 seconds in the history of boxing.
And then, as you indicated just in passing before, these enormous demonstrations broke out in the black community, all across the United
all
States.
In black neighborhoods all across the country, mostly good-natured, but in some places violent. There was a woman killed in Gary, Indiana. There was a black boy killed in Cleveland. You know, people overturning trolley cars, taunting whites, but you know, all across the country, and indeed beyond, you know, in black neighborhoods everywhere in the Caribbean, in Africa, everybody was following the fight. I mean, it's the kind of it had the kinds of numbers that you would envy. I think that 100 million people listened to the fight.
Really?
And
that,
I think
on radio.
By my calculation, I mean, you know, one is very reluctant to say the most or the biggest, but by my calculation, the largest radio audience in history, and far larger, for instance, than the radio audience that heard Seabiscuit.
Hmm.
You know, this was boxing after all. These were people involved. This was a mammoth event. And the world really stopped for it.
We only have about 2 minutes left, and I don't think we're ever going to get to World on the Brink. Of course, that's World War II. But Berlin, how did Hitler and Goebbels take this loss?
Well, of course, they had built up Schmeling, and they had always assumed that even though Louis was younger and stronger, that Schmeling was smarter and a better person. You know, the whole Nazi mythology was that if you had the determination and the will and the character, you could overcome anything. And they thought that Schmeling would win just on that. And so, of course,
another myth is that when the fight was broadcast back to Germany, and the myth was that they cut the broadcast in the middle when Schmeling went down. This is not true. The entire fight was broadcast. Another myth is that when Schmeling went back afterwards, he became a non-person. That also is not true. I mean, it's clear that it was a crushing blow to them, but they very quickly realized that they couldn't run away from it, and they just sort of dampened down the coverage. The coverage afterwards was very subdued. But Schmeling remained a visible figure in Germany afterwards, still going to Nazi rallies and stuff like this, even though he never joined the party. And I write in the book that he gets credit for never joining the party, but in fact, to do business in America in the 1930s, and particularly in largely Jewish New York, it would have been pretty suicidal to have any affiliation with the Nazis any more than he already had. So, when you know, he shouldn't be given too much credit for distancing himself from the Nazis. It would have been professionally suicidal.
Well, we have only scratched the surface in this long interview with David Margalek, and that's why he's written the book. It's absolutely incredible. Great photographs as well. Beyond Glory is the name of it. Joel Lewis versus Max Schmeling and A World on the Brink. Remember that David Margalek will be in Detroit Friday, October 7th at Borders Books in Birmingham. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic image.
Send a stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image Strippers delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image Strippers at 888-41-STRIP.
Explore Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty, awesome twosomes, the wild, girly girls. Turn your party into a bash and try a party appetizer to kick off your next gathering. Their costumed host, hostess, and bartenders will cater to your guest of honor and dazzle your party. Now at Erotic Image, male and female models for any and all events.
Call, click, or visit the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase. View Erotic Image strippers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything. Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
With Love the Double from Chase, why not make it pasta for two? Or sushi for two? Because whatever your favorite restaurant is, now you can enjoy it twice as much. Just pick up the tab with your Chase Rewards credit card, and you can earn double rewards now through December 31st. Plus, with Love the Double from Chase, get double rewards on gas, grocery, and drugstore purchases, too. With double the cash back, double the travel points, and double the great stuff, T for Two just got twice as exciting. Call 1-800-YOU-CHOOSE or visit chase.com/lovethedouble. Your choice. Your Chase.
Offer good through 12/31/05 at retail locations that classify their merchant location for Visa and MasterCard as restaurants, gas stations, grocery stores, and drugstores. Certain earning restrictions apply. For questions and to determine eligibility, call the number on the back of your credit card. Your account must be open and not in default.
it's Marty, the American Equity Market Spokesdog here. With interest rates all over the place these days, I've learned that chasing a great rate is like chasing your tail. It can be fun, but in the end, you're exhausted, and you look a little foolish. Meanwhile, your house has just been sitting there. Get it working for you. Refinance, take out cash to pay off credit cards, or make some home improvements with a great rate from American Equity Mortgage. Like this.
5.25% fixed. That's right. A low fixed rate of 5.25 at American Equity Mortgage. Call 888-229-7699. 5.25 fixed rate could be here today, gone tomorrow. 888-229-7699. BR 51691. Rate subject to change.
See? With American Equity Mortgage, you don't have to chase around for a great rate, which is good because your neighbor shouldn't have to witness that. Visit AmericanEquity.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. So many disasters in the news. Ongoing disaster in Iraq. Rita and Katrina in this Gulf, in our Gulf. And a big price tag to pay. And joining me is someone who is taking a beat on all this. Where is this money coming from? What? Who's involved? Is there any connection between Iraq and the Gulf in our area? If you think about it, it's the Gulf over in the Middle East, the Gulf here. Joining me is Antonia Yuhas. And Antonia Yuhas is the author of the forthcoming book, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World One Economy at a Time. And Antonia Yuhas is, she's worked for congressmen, including our own John Conyers here in Detroit. And she's now, she's left there to work full time on the Bush Agenda book. You can actually see the book and even get advanced copies or sign up for them at thebushagenda.org. And joining us from the Bay Area in California, Antonia Yuhas. Thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me. And just so my new organization is recognized, my new job is I'm a visiting scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. They're based in Washington, D.C., although I am based in San Francisco, as you said.
Oh, yeah, and they're our pals. We have representatives of that important think tank on all the time. And that really is a think tank. Some of these other ones that you hear about, the Heritage Foundation, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of an internal contradiction, but that's just my personal prejudices. Well, link up the war in Iraq and the disasters in the U.S. Gulf.
Well, unfortunately, there are a number of links, and they have mostly to do with the Bush administration's tendency and I think sort of central part of its agenda to favor the use of private corporations that often tend to be longtime allies of the administration and actually often difficult to separate out from the administration itself, as the primary players in both its military engagements and its economic engagements, both of which are also heavily linked. So we have both in Iraq and in the ravaged areas of the U.S. Gulf, the Katrina and Rita ravaged areas, the very same corporations receiving enormous contracts, billions and billions of dollars worth of contracts. These are companies including Halliburton, the vice president's former company and where he actually still receives remuneration from, the Bechtel Corporation, the Fluor Corporation, CH2M Hill, the Shaw Group, Blackwater Security Company, which I'm sure many of your listeners will recognize that name as the four poor souls who were hung from the bridge in Fallujah, which kicked off the U.S. engagement in Fallujah. Well, they are private security guards, and there are 164 of them operating in New Orleans at the moment. This wouldn't be problematic except for the fact that these companies have done such a terrible job in the reconstruction of Iraq, and U.S. taxpayers have paid and foot the bill for their failure in Iraq. What this says to me is that we unfortunately may expect the very same failure here in the United States, and all for the same reason, really political and corporate cronyism being operated out of the Bush administration. I think that what should have happened is that these companies should have had their contracts canceled in Iraq. And the lesson is really very simple for both Gulfs. There are companies, local companies in Iraq that could be doing the work, should be doing the work, local Iraqis who are ready to be hired and eager, who are passed over. And the same is true in the U.S. Gulf. There are local companies in the hurricane-impacted regions, workers that desperately need the money, desperately need the work, and are familiar with the local environment, who really should be the preference there as well.
Now, that's interesting, because I was going to bring up one of the objections to what you were saying, and that is that, hey, who do you expect to do it other than Bechtel and Halliburton, that they've got the resources? And the same thing in making war, if who's going to do it other than the usual defense contractors and the Carlyle Group and what have you. But that's interesting to think that we don't have to send over people that are charging $100 a meal, but rather that could be done locally. Can you back that up? In other words, describe, it's usually thought of as that the Iraqi and Iraqi society is completely non-functional, and if it wasn't for the presence of the American corporations doing at least a modest amount of supply and rebuilding, that they would just be dead in the water.
Well, it's one of the very sad myths that's been sold about Iraq. At the end of the last U.S. Gulf War in Iraq, the Iraqis rebuilt their electricity system in 3 months' time. It has now been 3 years, and electricity in Iraq is not even at pre-war levels. This means that everything in Iraq runs on electricity, water, sewage, everything. So this means that for 3 years, Iraqis who are accustomed to some of the best water services in the Middle East, some of the best electricity services in the Middle East, have gone sometimes with periods of 10-hour-long blackouts on average, raw sewage literally flowing through city streets where it never flowed before, and no water, no air conditioning in, of course, one of the hottest regions in the world. This is not something that Iraqis are accustomed to. And at the same time, as I said, their companies, of which there are plenty, and their workers, of which there are many, were specifically ignored by the U.S. government, which specifically wrote policies in Iraq so that U.S. companies would be hired and U.S. workers would be used for the restructuring of Iraq. The Iraqi workers are sitting unemployed. Many of them, I would imagine, have instead picked up arms and have become part of the resistance because they know that Bechtel, Shah, Fluor are running around with $3 billion, $4 billion contracts to do work that the Iraqis could be doing themselves, but more importantly, failing at work that is desperate for the lives of ordinary Iraqis, for their children, for their families. There are, in addition to private companies in Iraq, the Bush administration specifically rejected hiring any of the state companies for the rebuilding effort. Well, most of Iraqi's workers work for the state. It was a state-controlled economy. By specifically rejecting any workers who worked for the state, you are overlooking an entire quarter of the workforce. These were early decisions made by the administration that I think we are seeing the long-term costs of now, with increasing hostility, increasing opposition, and really, a quagmire in Iraq that hopefully the Bush administration is ready to get out of.
Well, Antonia Juhas, I think someone would make the argument that how can you expect any success in rebuilding when the insurgency continues?
Chicken and an egg. The insurgency has increasingly grown as the U.S. occupation has remained in place, as the reconstruction has increasingly failed. I know that when you poll Iraqis, what they say is, in the immediate aftermath of the invasion, many who may have not supported the invasion were certainly ready to give the Americans the benefit of the doubt. They were very happy to have Hussein gone, and they were ready and willing to work with the Americans and to move forward. Instead, they were specifically overlooked. Their ministries were ravaged while U.S. soldiers guarded oil infrastructure, which continues to this day, by the way. A very large number of U.S. soldiers remain stationed simply in guarding oil infrastructure. That has led to increased anger and, of course, insurgency attacks targeted at U.S. contractors, which I agree has now become essentially an untenable, inoperable position for U.S. contractors. Therefore, it only makes sense, finally, by now, that this money should be being handed over to Iraqis. However, that is still not happening. U.S. contractors are seeing their contracts increase, not decrease. Hmm. The billions of dollars that U.S. taxpayers are providing going to those companies. And, you know, I think people who say it's very difficult for U.S. contractors to work in Iraq are right, and therefore Iraqis should be doing it.
Now, you mentioned, this sounds like you're in New York City. Only when I interview people from New York do we hear sirens. Oh, that's fine. You mentioned money, and I always talk about taxpayer dollars and all that. On the other hand, and you don't find this really up in the headlines or anything, that skids filled with $20 bills and millions of dollars stuffed into duffel bags are the way that some of this money is distributed in Iraq. Do you know anything about that? I mean, how, when we talk about our money going there, I mean, obviously, when a contract is going to Halliburton, it's not being it's not given to them in a duffel bag in Baghdad. But what's the function of these huge amounts of cash that are actually going into Iraq?
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons why approximately $9 billion of both Iraqi money that was put under the control of the U.S. government in Iraq and U.S. taxpayer money is simply unaccounted for, has been spent, but no one knows where in Iraq. One of the reasons why is that the Bush administration really operated all of its activities in Iraq as if they were CIA operations. So, for example, the CIA is very accustomed to operating, literally carrying around duffel bags full of $100 bills, millions of dollars worth. It's the way that they operate, and it's standard practice. Well, the same practice took place for contracting in the immediate aftermath of the war. The Coalition Provisional Authority was walking around with duffel bags full of cash that they were handing out. And this has been well documented in congressional hearings, former CPA workers. And what they say is, look, you know, everything was being run out of the Pentagon, whereas in most U.S. military engagements, the economic reconstruction is run out of the State Department. And we were all operating under a sense of, you know, immediate war mentality, which meant that long-term thinking about the best mode of reconstruction, who should be doing the reconstruction, how it should be paid for, keeping track of the money, just simply wasn't taking place. And instead it was, you know, get it done and get it done now, but also turn it over to longtime Bush administration allies to whom we're simply not going to ask the same questions that we would normally ask. I think one of the most important lessons to take at this point as the process moves forward in Iraq is that, you know, we mostly describe the Bush administration as stumbling and bumbling in Iraq. Well, there has certainly been a fair amount of that. But as is the same in Katrina, in the Katrina-affected areas, these are policy choices made by the Bush administration to support its key corporate allies and to, in the end, advance its political interests. So right now, in Iraq, what is moving forward are economic laws, specifically oil laws, that have been very much in the interest and designed by the Bush administration and its corporate supporters that are guaranteeing continued and very much increased U.S. corporate access to Iraq's oil. Right now, between 2003 and 2004, 86% more Iraqi oil came to the United States than before. A full 50% of all Iraqi oil is now flowing to the United States. and it's U.S. companies like ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco that are reaping the benefits. In the Katrina-affected areas, the state legislators and state policymakers in those states had said for years and years and years, we know what's going to happen when there's a hurricane. We need these policies. We need this money. And the Bush administration in particular chose to vastly reduce the amounts of money that went to the states for hurricane prevention, and in the aftermath chose to favor its own corporations. And we're seeing the result of that. I think, you know, it's a mistake to frame what's happened in Iraq and what's happening in the U.S. Gulf as bumbling on the part of the Bush administration. It's policy choices that have led to, for most of us, devastating outcomes.
And Toni Juhas is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. She's the author of the forthcoming book, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. You can go to thebushagenda.org, and there'll also be a link on my page as well, peterwerbe.com. Now, there's actually this parallel. It's interesting, the Gulf there, the Gulf here, and such intense misery in both regions, and yet it is, you've said that right along. This is a boom, a boon, or whatever, you know, a boom and a boon for these certain corporations, even to the point where the companies like Halliburton, their profitability has been part of the overall strength of the U.S. economy in the recovery from the Bush recession.
Well, you know, one thing that's been very marked in the U.S. economic recovery, however, which is typical when you have an economy that's geared towards increasing the benefits to the wealthy and multinational corporations on the expectation that that wealth will trickle down to the rest of society, is that, you know, newspaper headlines just yesterday recorded new statistics on the U.S. economy that showed the wealthy have gotten wealthier and the majority of the population has decreased its share of the income pie and is doing worse. That has always been the outcome of policies directed at what's called supply side or Reaganomics, and that is the outcome of these policies now. So yes, Halliburton, its stocks are skyrocketing. ExxonMobil last year had the most profitable year of any company in the history of the world last year. Chevron Texaco had its most profitable year in its 125-year history. Bechtel is making billions of dollars. Each of these companies are making out like bandits. That's not making its way down to you and I. It's certainly not making its way into my pocketbook. And the outcome for the U.S. economy as a whole has not been good. The U.S. economy is still based on an average negative savings rate. The U.S. economy is growing on vast consumer purchases that are not supported by consumer income. And, you know, we're a bubble that if it bursts, it's not only going to affect our economy, it's going to affect the world's economy. And why does it keep going? Because companies like Halliburton and Bechtel and Fluor and Shaw and Exxon and Chevron are doing quite well. Thank you.
Well, Toni Juhas, maybe this is outside of the realm of the kind of research that you do so well, but I'm always just amazed that that hundreds of billions of dollars are just flushed. No, it's not. We always say flushed down a rat hole. They're not flushed down a rat hole. They're going to the corporations that you mentioned, and they're coming out of my pocket and your pocket and everyone listening. And if you talk to people, they go, yeah, there's no that kind of outrage that you often see in other countries. Just doesn't seem to be present here. Any handle on that? I mean, if you say you don't know, I'll be right with you because I can't figure it.
Well, you know, I actually disagree. I think that in the United States, you know, we may not bring out, 2 million people on the street in a drop of a hat, but people exercise their opposition in different ways, and that opposition is growing. And one of the things that does happen in the United States is that activities of opposition just don't get the same attention in the press. So, for example, the Bechtel Corporation, which is headquartered in San Francisco, has been shut down by protesters so many times that after being based here for 100 years, they've moved their central base of operations to Maryland. Huh. And insiders say that one of the main reasons is that they couldn't take the public protest anymore. They were having to defend themselves too many times. Chevron Texaco's world headquarters is regularly protested by people from all over the country, all over the world, expressing their opposition at the policies of that company, its links to the war in Iraq, its links to the Bush administration. Halliburton has had the very same impacts. Congressional inquiries going into these corporations have only happened because of public outcry and a public demand for an accounting of these resources. And I think the fact that the contractors in the Katrina-affected region are getting so much more attention. For example, there was a front-page New York Times story on the contracting 2 days ago, is because of the sort of slow-growing awareness of the fraud and abuse that's taking place in Iraq. And it's the same companies here, and now they're getting attention. So I actually think that, you know, the American public does act, does get upset, but we don't see it as often as we should. And I think the more that we, you know, who are part of that call for awareness and call for resistance can point out that it is happening, the more people will join and the more, you know, effective it will feel. What I hear mostly from people is that, yes, they're upset at the fact that the largest U.S. multinational corporations not only don't pay taxes but get more money back than they put in, but what can they do about it? Well, the truth is we have been doing a great deal about it. We have made fundamental changes, and, you know, we can continue to do more. The majority of the American population right now thinks that U.S. troops should be drawn out of Iraq immediately. Immediately. Now, that is an effect of long, ongoing organizing, a strong belief among the American public, and we saw that visibly with all of the protests that happened last Saturday against the war. So I think one of the most important things to say is there is resistance, there is opposition, and, you know, I have faith in the American public ability to do even more.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. For my website, peterwerby.com, I was trying to get figures for the different demonstrations, and they only referred to San Francisco in light of, of course, the much-reduced figure for Washington, D.C. They said smaller demonstrations occurred in San Francisco, and I don't know what kind of figure you've heard, but I have David Bacon, who's a labor reporter in the Bay Area, who's been a guest on this show, somewhere between 20 and 50,000 people come out in a single city. I mean, that's quite extraordinary.
Yes, it is. And, you know, in Washington, D.C., Police Chief Ramsey, never a big friend of protests in Washington, D.C., said on the day of the protest that there were at least 200,000 people. So if he predicted, if he said that there were 200,000 people, I would say there were, you know, at a minimum were 250,000 people. That's an enormous showing. That's an enormous showing.
It is. Antonia Juhas, we only have a few minutes left, okay. And we were remiss, and I'm sure you'll agree, in not talking about your forthcoming book, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. Is Iraq the first?
Iraq is the first, and the focus of the book is really looking at Iraq as a model for the economic agenda of the Bush administration. And as I said, while much of the administration's goals in Iraq have not been successful, unfortunately, and from my perspective, it looks like the economic agenda may yet be successful, particularly if we remind ourselves that, you know, the U.S. government, particularly George Bush's father, Herbert Walker Bush, worked actively, particularly on the economic front, with Saddam Hussein. The Bush administration and the U.S. government are more than willing to work with, you know, a non-ideal government in Iraq, as long as that government, you know, is willing to work with us. And it looks like, from a oil perspective and a U.S. corporate perspective, Iraq is going to open itself significantly more to the United States. But Iraq is really seen as a jumping-off point. So the Bush administration has also proposed a U.S. Middle East free trade area that would expand U.S. corporate access significantly further into the Middle East than it has gone before. One of the areas for expansion is what's known as the services industry, in particular energy services. And according to the agreements as they have been signed thus far, this in particular looks at oil and other energy services, such as natural gas. This agenda is being pushed forward much more rapidly than anyone would have anticipated, mostly because the Bush administration has applied the threat of essentially regime change in those countries of the Middle East that don't follow the administration's economic policy. But we can also see these policies and the threat of military action taking shape in different countries in Africa, in Venezuela, in places around the world in particular where there is oil wealth that the administration would like, but also just places where there is a lot of money and where, you know, corporations, particularly large multinational corporations aligned with the administration would like to see their access expanded into. The good news, again, on this front is that, you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, there is and has been a very large and growing opposition movement around the world to the policies of, you know, corporate expansion, corporate globalization, which is starting to take shape in response to the Bush administration's policies. But I'm hoping that through the book, greater awareness will be made of what those policies actually are and where they're planning on going, and therefore, you know, help create the necessary opposition to them.
Antonia Juhas has been my guest in the Peter Werby Show. Her forthcoming book is The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. And you can find out about that and the other writings and activities, speeches, what have you, of Antonia Juhas at thebushagenda.org. Thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Hey, I know it's late, but the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, they can help you. If you go to rockfinancial.com, you can get information about purchasing a home, refinancing, even consolidating some of your debt. Check us out, rockfinancial.com. You can wait till tomorrow and call 800-333-ROCK. You can go to the web right now, punch us up, rockfinancial.com. If you're purchasing a new home, we've got options for you may not know about, and they're exclusive to the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. Maybe you want to refinance your current mortgage, lower your payment, lower your interest rate, or you may be looking to consolidate some high-interest credit card debt. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now and check it out. See if there's something that makes sense for you. It can't hurt. It's late anyway. Might as well go to rockfinancial.com. Rock Financial is proud to be Michigan's largest mortgage company and available for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Check us out, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
Hey, third shifters, listen up! Because you demanded it, Ford Lanes in Dearborn Heights presents the all-new Third Shifter League. For all you third shifters that like to work hard and play hard, Ford Lanes' new Third Shift League begins Tuesday, October 11th. It's three-person teams for men and women every Tuesday morning at 7:30. With a short season, you don't have to worry about a long commitment. Ford Lanes Restaurant and Bar will be open at 7:30 for all you third shifters all season long. Don't forget, Ford Lanes is a great bar to come watch all your favorite sporting events on their big screen. Open 7 days a week. Also, don't miss karaoke and cosmic bowling every Friday and Saturday evening. Don't wait, third shifters. Ford Lanes has the bowling league designated just for you. Sign up now by calling Ford Lanes at 313-292-1700 and ask for Nate. You asked for it and you got it. Backed by popular demand, Ford Lanes Third Shifter League. Starting Tuesday, October 11th. Ford Lanes, located on Van Born near Telegraph and Dearborn Heights. Need more info? Then call Ford Lanes at 313-292-1700.
The party never stops. Tuesday nights with The Riff at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Join 101 WRIF this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. The Riff will be there to party hard with a ton of free Riff gear to give away and lots of other surprises, but you can't get them if you don't come out. If you've never been to Leopard's Lounge, you're missing all the fun. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they have the most beautiful women in the world all there for your pleasure. So head on to Leopard's Lounge and get ready.
ready for your wildest dreams to come true. As always, guys, remember, Leopard's Lounge brings you the hottest girls on the planet, and they never charge a cover, ever. It's the best deal around. So get your buddies together and head out to Riff Night this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge and get ready to party. Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandot West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Broyle. Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
Another Riff lifter. Another Hemi G winner.
Hello.
Hello.
Am I the winner?
You are.
Kick-ass. That is ridiculous.
It's the Supercharged Giveaway on the Riff.
From Century Dodge, a member of the Holiday Automotive Group.
And the home of everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Party rats!